Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! About a minute and a half past the hour, and let's see if we can actually get through a program tonight. I'm sorry about last night, and if I could do something about the little mice or goats or whatever it is that play tag team through the inner tubes and make it all go, I would have. But it was just frustrating last night. I've been prattling on for God knows how long when I looked over at the interface that shows whether or not we're sending a program, and I wasn't sending a program, and the internets or the inner tubes or something had burped and gone all sideways on me. So I, at that point in time, had the last amount of frustration that I could tolerate for the time being. And without seeming too much of a prima donna, I punted. I'm sorry. My bad. But, I had like two or three burps there on the tubes. And it was just a little bit more than I could actually tolerate. So that's what happened last night. I don't even know how much. I don't even know if you how much got through about the sick, twisted, repressed, closeted right wing, the former chairman of the Clark County, Indiana Republican Party got through him being also the former national chairman of the National Young Republicans Federation and whatnot, and having been busted and pled guilty yesterday for doing something to a young man in the middle of the night when the young man was asleep that the young man didn't want done to him, that amounted to criminal deviant sexual conduct or something like that in Indiana. Just another day in the world of the pig-licking party. What more can you say? It's how they are. It must be tough to be that repressed and that weirded out. But I won't do that. That's enough of that. Although I was all set. I was so all set doing that whole story. And then, wow, this is like just going over old ground all over again. But I was all set because I was going to do that whole story about the repig-licking prevert and his criminal, deviant, sexual conduct. And then I was going to bump out with this because it was just perfect. I hate to waste a good bumper. So this is for you, Glenn Murphy, Jr., wherever you are, hopefully soon wearing stripes. Indiana, wasn't talking he was doing.
If a man ever needed dying, he did. No one has the right to say what he said about you. And it's so cold and lonely here without you.
Wouldn't that have just been perfect if the inner tubes would have cooperated? Oh, that would have been good. And you know, the parody inside my brain is almost writing itself even as we speak. But John's a little busy right now. John Fox, our chief engineer as well as our webmaster. He's a little tied up getting the website back on the air, and he's busting his butt. Oh, at this point, I think he's just mainlining the coffee, you know, straight into his arm from an IV bottle to stay awake. He's been pouring so much into it, and tells me that at some point in the near future, there will. Lottie, stop it! Oh, that's just terrible. Bob, Glenn Murphy Jr. was just cleaning it for him when it went off accidentally. Whoop! Yeah. Humor after the fact. This would have been so good yesterday. It would have been just great yesterday. Flipping inner tubes. Poor, sad, repressed Repiglickens. Oh, and congratulations go out today to a dear friend of mine, a buddy out in L.A., who just matriculated from the University of California at Los Angeles, I found out today. Congratulations. And if I knew all the lyrics and didn't sing like terrible, I'd hum a few bars of Gaudiamus Igitur or whatever. You know, the graduation song. Never mind. But congratulations. So that's what we're not doing at the start of the show. Instead, and again, a reminder, no shows probably tomorrow and Thursday. I'm taking the boy to a seminar he got invited to. I didn't get invited to any seminars when I was a rising seventh grader. He's got it so all over me. But Ferg's going to a health sciences seminar in Morgantown, which is about a 320-mile round trip, and I got a feeling I'm going to get the vapors, literally, trying to fill up the 37-gallon tank of the pickup truck to take him up there. Oh! 37 gallons times $4.10 a gallon. Ah! Yeah, but I think it's going to be very valuable for him, and that's why we're doing this. So, I don't know. I might, depending on whether or not where we're staying has any inner tubes, might try to do a show from the dorm room tomorrow night. That should be fun. Or somewhere. That could be a blast. I'll take this stuff with me and see if it works. And if I can, I'll do a show. If I can't, there'll be a rerun. And I don't know what time I will be back Thursday evening. If I'm back early enough, I'll try to make sure that I'm on the air Thursday evening as well, and then Friday is just normal, whatever normal is beyond a setting on a dryer, as Peter Godbold says. And speaking of Peter Godbold, he's a rerun tonight. We're kind of snake bit these days between my inner tubes and his server nightmares with his actual, you know, real world job, and the website being down. Let's see, John's snake bit, I'm snake bit. Peter's snake bit. Guy wasn't able to go today. Biorhythms? Phase of the moon? Tilt of the universe? Don't know, but it's been a weird week starting out. And we'll try to get it normal by the end of the week and then start off next week really regular and not, you know, just completely out of hand. So that's the announcements portion of the program, and I hope that's all there is to announce. Let's see. You know, of course, that Al Gore has endorsed Barack Obama. He did that in did that in Michigan. It's the first time that he has ever called upon the subscribers to his AlGore.com website to contribute to a political campaign, so I think that says something. Now, on with the show. There's stuff that I've missed in the last couple of days, stuff that shook out over the weekend that deserves talking about, that you're welcome to bring to the table if I should happen to forget to. But the one that I'm gonna start the program this evening with something that might seem rather prosaic, and that is a story coming out from the American Medical Association today. You know, for a while now, insurance companies, the for-profit sickness industry, insurance, has been issuing report cards on physicians. Well, the American Medical Association, the world's largest, most powerful union, the doctors' union, issued an intensively fact-driven, statistic-laden report card on the insurance industry today. Very, very interesting. And I read, I used the Google, and read about five different stories on this report card. And the bare facts alone out of the report card are quite interesting. Something like, dig this. You want to get an idea of how busted up and broken and screwed up and screwed over our healthcare system is in this country? This report card should be really enough to get you on your way. According to this report from the American Medical Association, the world's strongest, most powerful union, doctors spend 14% nationally, 14% of their annual income, you know, the money coming through the door at the office in the form of maladies and non-well-beings, they spend 14% of their income just trying to get the insurance companies to honor their agreements and pay up. That's really a rather astonishing number if you stop to think about it. 14%. You know, heck, the church only wants you to give 10. But the insurance companies spend 14%, or the doctors spend 14% of their money. Now, please don't think that I've got some vision in my head of some little starving physician with his nose pressed up against a frosty window pane somewhere, a la Little Match Girl. Yeah, please, can I come in from the cold? No. But still, 14% of income is spent just trying to get the insurance companies to do what the insurance companies, at least in theory, are mandated by law and by contract to do in the first place. That is, pay claims. And the study, if you go and actually look at the study, there's a lot of mumbo-jumbo in it. A lot of that statistical stuff and means and margins and this, that, and the other thing. But you can distill it to some basic facts. And the most telling one of all out of this is that, the worst of the insurance companies who were surveyed, and what they did is they just randomly yanked billing forms to create a statistically relevant pile of data. Relating to 7 or 8 different national insurance companies. Cigna was one. United Health was another. Aetna, I think, was in it. BCBS, Blue Cross Blue Shield, was in there somewhere. And Medicare. The worst of the lot, United Healthcare only paid 67% of its just claims anything approaching on time. And the others went upward from there. However, none of the insurance companies met the same 98% standard of on-time payment as, the drum roll please, Medicare. I want to take this study and roll it up and cram it sideways down the throats of the John McCains of the world and the George Bushes of the world and the Mitch McConnells of the world and the John Boners of the world and all the other filthy, pig-licking rat bastards who say Medicare is socialized medicine and it don't work. The American Medical Association has just proven, at least from an accounting standpoint, that it damn sure does. While the that 14% number I mentioned earlier, that's just 14%. It's a little bit. It's $210 billion a year. No, really. $210 billion a year. Well, that's a couple of days in Iraq. Is spent just trying to get the for-profit illness industry to live up to its own bargains, to live up to its own contracts. You know, it seems if I scratch my pointy little head hard enough, I can remember somewhere along the way some guy saying that we already pay enough money for health care in this country to have universal single-payer health care. It's just that the money gets wasted on the for-profit illness industry. Don't I remember something like that? Come on, help me. I think he's from Ohio. I think he's from up around Cleveland somewhere. Dennis Kucinich. Dennis Kucinich said that a long time ago. Dennis Kucinich said it so long ago that, in fact, he said it in 2004 when he was running for president the first time and had to wait for the big serious candidates to come around and notice the issue because they weren't talking about it until he did. And it hasn't changed any from then to now, with the single exception that it's gotten dramatically worse. Medicare pays its bills. Medicare pays your bills because you pay for Medicare if you're old enough to have it. It works. You see, that's the kind of statistic that we also see with Social Security. Social Security has the least waste, fraud, and abuse of any program of its type in the country. There's more waste, fraud, and abuse. There is more institutional administrative cost in sending out annuity checks or checks from stock brokerages or any of the money-changing for-profit types. But, like Social Security, the Republican Party loathes it. They hate it. They want to kill it. You know why they want to kill it? Because it works. And why do we put up with it? Why do we tolerate it? Why do we speak in measured tones? And, well, you know, there is an equally compelling case put forward by the Republican Party that, and, you know, John McCain standing there, my friends, families need to make medical choices, not the government. Looks like the government's doing a pretty damn good job, especially considering that they do it on a shoestring, and they have to do it while constantly under attack from the miserable, godless, soulless, motherless rat bastards in the Repig-Lickin' Party. Imagine what Medicare could do if it was actually fully funded and applied to every American. I got a little worked up when I read this story. I actually fired off a letter to my senators and congressmen, you know, an email, not that they'll read it, you know, some aide will read it and send me a letter back, you know, with the automatic signature signing machine signature on it, telling me, thank you for your valuable input, kiss my ass, you know how it is. But John Conyers has had the Medicare for All Act in the House of Representatives for, lo, yea, verily, God only knows how long now. And we're still waiting. Because we have to, we have to bow and scrape to the profit industry first. Because for some reason or another, I can't get my head around this. We still have to subsume the health of the American people, from babies to the elderly, to the need of some insurance executive to buy a new Bentley every year. I can't make that work in my head. Why is that guy more important than the rest of America? What's he do? Nothing. Nothing. He's an electron chaser. He doesn't even push paper or count beans anymore. It's all digital. We'd be better off paying the millions of dollars to the damn computer. Pay the IT guy that makes the computer do the stuff that gets the guy paid. Sorry, I guess I'm coming unglued a little bit. I don't mean to, but this is so frustrating. How many uninsured are there in America? 50 million? And even the insured people, according to this study, are getting screwed. Because the insured people have insurance, and they do everything right, and they turn in all the forms to the doctor, and they enter the right codes, and they send the little codes off to the insurance company, and some little functionary in the insurance company says, we don't pay. So then they got to send it off again, and again, and again, and again. And instead of worrying about his patients, the doctor is worrying about whether some sleazebag insurance company is going to live up to the bargain that they've already struck with him or her. So therefore, patient quality of care goes down. Now, as all this sort of, you know, Legos together, you would think, you would imagine, and I would bet you would be right, that the quality of care for Medicare patients is actually higher because the doctor's getting to doctor. Because they submit the form, and 98% of the time, the claim is paid in time. It's amazing. Now, let me tell you the punchline to all of this. I said at the as I began leading into this whole thing, that I'd read about five different accounts of this report being released. Not one of the five that I read, and maybe you can find some that do, but I didn't. Not one of the five news stories that I read mentioned the fact that Medicare was the most efficient at paying its bills. Not one. Oh, they talked about Aetna, and they talked about Cigna, and they talked about the other sleazy for-profit the illness industry wallet rapists. Not one mentioned the Medicare. I had to go read the report to find that out. Do you need a more glaring example of what the problem is in this country? Do you need a more glaring example of what a great, big, howling, screaming failure the for-profit media is? Are? The for-profit media are not interested in telling you that the not-for-profit health care administration of Medicare is far better than any insurance company. Because for-profit gangs stick together. They are thicker than thieves. And I found that little fact as telling as most of the facts contained inside the report. Email, how much are the docs paying for malpractice? I know a few medical professionals that have been laid off quite in debt from hospital jobs because the hospitals asserted that malpractice premiums are too high. By the way, you can't forget that the insurance contract rate is not nearly what we would pay without medical insurance. Exactly. The people who go in and say that they're private pay or uninsured, there are charity funds that are there to pay for indigent care, what care they get. But the people who just go in and get the bill, that bill is monumentally higher than anything that an insurance company will pay because an insurance company negotiates a deal, which then it drags its feet on paying because insurance companies, whether it's your auto insurance, your homeowner's insurance, your health insurance, whatever kind of insurance it is, insurance companies are in the business of taking in money, not paying it out. And most state insurance commissions are so lily-livered and weak that they dare not say boo to the insurance industry, lest the insurance industry smack them. In fact, most insurance commissioners in the states of this union are actually former insurance company executives. Tell me that. That's not the fox watching the hen house. And malpractice insurance? Oh, dear God, don't get me going on malpractice insurance. That's the biggest dodge in America. Because the insurance companies, let me see if I've got this right, the insurance companies lump in doctors in regional areas and then use regional areas for premium setting instead of doing it on a national basis. If you did your premium calculation on a national basis, it would be dramatically lower than what it is doing it via the, again, profit-generating way that the insurance industry does it. And, Lord God, I think of all the people who are malpracticed on in this country, something like maybe 7% actually do something about it. I know it's teeny tiny low. The rest of them are referred to as people who opt for the lumpet factor. Well, God wanted me to have the wrong leg cut off, and now I ain't got none, so that's God's will. Well, there you go. And then people who have for-profit insurance also get ripped off because, among other things that happen, let's say it's an 80-20 policy. Insurance pays 80%, you pay 20%. We've talked about this in the past, but it bears repeating. Well, in many instances, the insurance company has negotiated a rate for, say, setting a broken arm. And the follow-up care with the orthopedist and whatever. And let's say the cost of setting a broken arm is $1,000. Well, that would mean that the insurance company would pay $800 and you would pay $200, right? 80-20. We're just using round numbers here because I'm really not that good with them. And I'm trying to make this as easy for me as for you. Well, what happens is the insurance company actually has negotiated a deal so that instead of paying $800, they pay $5. So that when they pay $500 and you still pay $200, you're paying two-fifths, or 40%, not 20. And thereby, you get defrauded again. Oh, this dodge it's got layers, and it's the oniony-est. Oh, Jesus. What legalized theft this is. And if we the people had any gumption about us, we wouldn't tolerate it. We would demand that a highly efficient, highly effective, good quality system like Medicare, which was a good idea in its beginning, continues to be a good idea, and can be a good idea for the rest of the country, that we would demand that it be extended to the rest of the country. Now, because everything went south last night, I didn't get to say much of anything, if at all, about Tim Russert. And you know what? I came up with a new word. You know me, coming up with new words. Over the weekend, yeah, clickety, 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 clickety. I'm a little bit of TV time. Tried to watch a little bit of the U.S. Open because I am a golf geek, and it was Father's Day, and I couldn't be out on the golf course and kind of wanted to. Haven't played golf in a year and a half, probably. And I like playing golf. I highly recommend golf. I know. It's probably the environmentalists would take me to task. Why don't you play croquet, Bob? Because it's boring. But anyway, and that's not gooning on environmentalists. It's just there's some stuff. I like a nice, what did Mark Twain call golf? A nice walk spoiled? I love a nice walk spoiled. But anyway. But I clicked across the TV a little bit, and there was the seemingly endless parade of people singing the praises of Tim Russert. And for heaven's sakes, I have not come here to praise Tim Russert, but to bury him. And I say that because there's been enough praising, more than enough. All these people talking about how Tim Russert was nonpartisan and he was just a great journalist trying to get to the truth. I went and I saw some clips of Tim Russert and just looked around a little bit, and I watched him, bear down and, just zero in on a Democrat when, on the other hand, he'd ask a Republican a question, they'd dodge his question, and he'd say, okay, then on to the next issue. Not daring to zero in. But far more than his, the invented word. If you think back to the death of Ronald Reagan, or the death of Nixon, that too, death of Gerald Ford, and now the untimely passing of Tim Russert, what you had was a eulogy. That's a combination of the word eulogy and the word orgy. Because it is. It was just an orgy of eulogizing. By all of the inside baseball gang from the for-profit media. Propping him up and saying nice things, but so that because they hope that somebody will say something similarly nice when they shuffle off this mortal coil. So the next time somebody famous passes away and it's just unending coverage, ceaseless coverage of the death of whoever it is, we've got a new word. It's a eulogy. E-U-L-O-R-G-Y, eulogy. Yeah. But again, with the healthcare story as it presented itself, I couldn't help thinking about the passing of Tim Russert in that context, too. The guy died of a massive explosion of one of his arteries that caused sudden, irrevocable cardiac arrest. He had had a stress test in April that showed he was more or less okay. But anytime you turned the TV on and saw that great big florid red face, you knew there was something going on. The guy's hauling down $10 million a year, and not exactly doing world beating journalism. In the process. And he can't find time to get adequate testing. Because you know what? What killed Tim Russert could have been found. It wasn't a mystery. This isn't 1900 when you just drop dead for no apparent reason. That was findable. Might have been findable with a PET scan, positron emitting tomography. Might have been findable with an arteriogram. They're unpleasant, but compare it to what happened. Could have been discoverable in any number of ways, but he didn't do it. He just went to his doctor and then, okay, whatever. because the doctor is cognizant of the cost. The doctor's not thinking about doctoring, he's thinking about cost and whether or not he can get some miserable accountant to pass Holly Smoot on the pre-certification for Tim Russert. And the guy's making, he's a millionaire. Now, contrast that, if you will, with something that goes on at any given time at the best, if not one of the best, if not the best, healthcare facilities in the country, and that is Cleveland Clinic. They bought my dad another decade on his life that I'm very grateful for, and they treated him like gold. Cleveland Clinic is an amazing place. And he got one bill. He didn't get the anesthesiologist and the radiologist and the cardiologist and the thisologist and thatologist and then a bill from the hospital. No, one bill. And I love the way they, you know, when you're a doctor at the Cleveland Clinic, you're not just a doctor at the Cleveland Clinic, you're a daggum fellow. You're on a fellowship and you're paid princely money. And they don't care if you see 10 patients a day or 100, as long as you're doing the best doctoring you can possibly do. And they invent stuff there. The guy that wound up doing the catheterization on my dad was actually a WVU graduate who had then gone on and done medical school and residencies and internships at places like Johns Hopkins and UAB Birmingham. And he had invented a special wire for doing and, you know, getting rich off that, too. And you know, beautiful stuff. I'm not averse to someone making a nice living. Oh, no. No, God knows. I'd like to. But they did marvelous work on my dad. But while I was there, I couldn't help noticing that there were lots and lots and lots of, and this is not xenophobic or anything, it's just an observation, the place was just absolutely awash in Arabs. Well-off Arabs. From the Middle East, from the UAE, from Saudi Arabia, from Jordan, Qatar, Bahrain, on and on. And they were there because once a year, you know, Kuwait, I was told, because I interviewed one of the people who was like one of the manservants to one of the mucky mucks, I said, you know, how come... And apparently the Cleveland Clinic got a great name for doing tremendous work in preserving the life of some couple of royal Arabs at some point, perhaps even a member of the Hashemite family. Yeah, I think it was, King Hussein of Jordan, who was attended to toward the end of his life by Cleveland Clinic and was just adored. And so once a year, lots of the well-to-do over there, and even some of the not-so-well-to-do, because they get subsidized by their government, they come to Cleveland Clinic, and they check in, and they have everything from the ends of their hair to the tips of their toenails checked out. Their heart, their pulmonary system, their entire circulatory system, pancreas, gallbladder, spleen, liver, small intestine, large intestine, Isles of Langerhans, kidneys. Everything gets checked out, and they kind of treat it like a medical vacation. And if there's anything wrong, they fix it. Had Tim Russert done something like that, Tim Russert would still be throwing softballs to Repiglicans every Sunday morning on Meet the Press. But that wouldn't be American now, would it? That wouldn't be what did dear leader say? Uniquely American. No. Even if you're up in that rarefied atmosphere and that rarefied class, you know, $10 million a year or whatever, you are expect to, by God, work till you drop dead. Unless you're a member of the ruling government class, in which case you are that is done to you once a year. Do you maintain any sort of fiction that Dick Cheney, with his five deferments and his five or six or seven or eight heart attacks or whatever, do you have any illusion that that man would still be shuffling along on this mortal coil had he been some working stiff? That guy would have been dead 30 years ago. But instead, he's part of the power elite, he's part of the moneyed elite, and he's part of the government elite. So he receives the same kind, he's treated like a prize bull. And the same applies to the President of the United States, Democrat or Republican. And they're constantly checked out. And if they go, you know, it's off to Walter Reed. You know what? Every American deserves that level of health care. We need rules in place for the workplace that say that if a person is valuable enough to be employed, that person is valuable enough to be given the time necessary to make sure that they stay alive so that they can remain employed and remain in the bosom of their loving family. Healthcare, it's not just for presidents anymore. Healthcare, good enough for a senator? Good enough for an auto mechanic. I guess that makes me some sort of commie. But why we are not in the streets? Oh, stop it, Bob. Why we are not at least bleating like the little sheep we are? At least asking our Congress critters to get on board with John Conyers' Medicare for All Act is beyond me. You know, going to vote for Barack Obama, would have voted for Hillary Clinton had she been the nominee. But they were both up on stage prattling along about how we needed to make sure that we continue to subsidize the damned insurance companies as we try to get health care for everybody in this country. Pardon me, and I speak only for myself, but I engage the vanity of thinking that I probably speak for some of you as well when I say screw the insurance companies. I don't care if the CEO of Cigna is in a damn bread line tomorrow. I just don't care. When you're making 40, you know, the statistic came out, I had it yesterday, well, okay, here it is now. The statistic came out that even though the economy was going in the toilet in 2007, corporate CEO salaries continued to go up. Man, that's a nice racket. You do good, your salary goes up. You screw up, your salary goes up. And never has heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. It's all just a big rock candy mountain if you're a high-ranking member of the corporate class. But the people who carry the corporate class, the people who make the lives of the corporate class possible, well, they're more or less just like the people who dug the Hawk's Nest Tunnel 7 or 8 miles from where I am. Most of them were African Americans, and they'd come out from digging that tunnel through pure silica, just the sand, pure sandstone. And they'd come out and their skin would just be blanched white with the dust of it, and they'd be coughing and gobs of blood coming out of their mouth. And they'd say, "Boss, I gotta take a little break." And the boss man would say, "You take all the break you need. You're fired, because there's another guy right behind you that wants your job. Get the hell out of here, boy. Here's your hammer. Go to it." And that's how the Hawk's Nest Tunnel got dug, and that's how the American economy runs. If somebody doesn't shoulder their load for a nanosecond, American business is ready to throw a worker to the curb because he has no union protection, because the Republican Party has done everything in their power to make sure that there can't be. Because they know that there's somebody right behind them that'll take the job for less. And that's a net gain. And hey, somebody tell that in accounting. I bet I'll get a raise out of that. Oh, Buffy. You can go and buy that platinum plated solid gold bidet you've been wanting, dear. Jesus. I hate him. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
What's up, Albert?
Hey, I'll tell you, you're right. These people are contemptible beyond all contempt. You know, I love how Republicans, I love this. I love that you even brought this up. Because I love how Republicans are like, oh, it's my money. I don't need any more taxes. Why should health care is going to make my taxes go up? But, you know, they don't understand that insurance is the cruelest tax of them all. Because if you don't have the insurance, that's how you can wind up destitute. We, in this, you know, they talk about drowning tax. I don't mind, you know, taxes. I understand it pays for roads. I hope it pays for scientific advances, you know, and that and this. So I don't mind that. It pays for schools and education and clean water and things of that nature. I don't have a problem with it. What I have a problem with is I'm drowning in insurance. I got insurance. I mean, it's $280 for my family. And my wife's a nurse.
You're getting off cheap, brother.
No, it's not. It's not a little bit of money. You know?
Oh, no. But I mean, in America, where family coverage can run up to $2,000 a month.
Oh, I'm lucky. Everybody's healthy. That's all I'm saying, and that's what I need. I can be empathetic because for us, it's a sizable chunk of our money. You know, they talk about tax. Well, that insurance is at least 80% of our taxes that we pay. Insurance is equal to. That's what I mean. As that,
yeah.
And if you had deductibles, and we don't even go to the doctor. We just don't. We have it, you know, God forbid there's an accident or something crazy like that, you know, so we can cover it. But other than that, you know, you got the sniffles, here's some vitamin C. No, you ain't got to be going to the doctor for no sniffles, you know. And the thing is, the biggest problem of all of this is because we do have a for-profit health system. I mean, anybody who gets into health care, right? I know Agnes was a nurse, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
My mom, everybody in my family, everybody's medicine, and they do it because they care about people.
Yes.
Like, if you work in a nursing home and you're a nurse, I mean, you know, that's like one of the, I mean, it's maybe not intensive care with babies, but at the same time, man, you're seeing a cruel and vicious just age and what it does to people. And, you know, lives, I mean, these people don't know their name, and you got to wipe their butt and feed them. And, I mean, it's like having, you know, 90-year-old, 80-year-old babies, you know, giant babies. And they take care of, you know, buildings of these guinea pigs. And that's what they do. They test drugs on them, and they do all this other stuff. You know, but we're talking, if the health corporation, you know, if the health industry could be for not-for-profit, you know, you certainly pay them what they're worth. You know, they do a lot of good for people, so, you know, like Cleveland, you can pay them. Look at
just from a sort of, ratio basis, if Medicare pays 98% of its claims on time, Albert, and doctors are spending 14% of their income, or $210 billion a year, trying to squeeze what they're actually owed out of the for-profit healthcare industry, then it would seem to me that even if Medicare negotiates a lower rate, it's still a wash because the doc isn't having to spend the extra money trying to get the damn claim paid.
Oh, exactly. I mean, exactly. And you mentioned malpractice. You know, if the health industry wasn't for profit, you wouldn't have people that are going in it for nothing but the money. You know what I'm saying? If the incentive was to provide health to people, it would be an incentive of not, you know, after-the-fact medicine. It would be preventive medicine. Everybody would be covered. Everybody would get these PEP scans and CAT scans and this and that and all this other stuff.
Yeah, keeping it from happening is cheaper than fixing it after it does. It always is.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Is it cheaper to let it, you know, to prevent it or give everybody a CAT scan?
If you replace a balding tire, what we in this neck of the woods call a Maypop, if you replace a balding tire, and that balding tire costs you $125, I know,
uh-huh,
that's cheap, but let's say it's $125. Well, that kind of hurts at the moment. But You have just saved yourself the price of a whole entire new automobile when the Maypop pops and you're doing 75 miles an hour and you get sideways into a tree or a guardrail and, you know, somebody you love or yourself gets all beat up. The car gets totaled. Yeah, $125.
Save your
$100,000. You pay.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You know, and that's the whole thing. I mean, we got a big problem, which it's just even the way we do. You know, and that's what I say. You know, you hate to sound like a raving communist, but, you know, capitalism is not, you know, what the Constitution said that we need to have. You know, it's not, capitalism isn't designed to go right. Now you're trying to say communist, but I'm just trying to say, let's make a new ist. Let's make a good ist.
Well, okay, well, then wait a minute. If I'm not mistaken, Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations was published in 1776, the same year as the Declaration of Independence. So, everything that's contained in the Declaration of Independence was not, you know, sort of by logic, was not predicated upon capitalism. It could not have been.
Exactly.
It was predicated on the Enlightenment. It was predicated on Hobbes and Locke and Rousseau. And such as that. So then you get the Constitution, and the Wealth of Nations has still only been out for a decade or so, not even a decade, maybe a decade.
Yeah. Yeah.
So most of the stuff in the Constitution isn't predicated on capitalism. Capitalism, in terms of the framework of our country and the philosophies that went into its founding, was a Johnny-come-lately.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you sit there and you look at it, you gotta be honest. You know, you gotta sit there and say, you know, just, you can be the most, you know, profits, fine, make your money, whatever, but you gotta sit there and look at a system that needs infinite growth. It needs infinite growth. We don't have infinite resources. We cannot have infinite growth. And if we treat the world...
Infinite growth is cancer!
Exactly.
I don't care if it's going on inside your body or in your society. Unrestrained, unregulated, wild-ass growth is cancer, and it's terminal.
Yes, indeed. I mean, and this is the thing that these people, like, you know, they don't want the government telling them what to do, but they want these insurance guys that make $1 billion, billion. What was that guy? That guy looked like a skeleton, man. He just looked like the most evil demon. That guy, he was in the movie. He got a $1.1 billion severance package. What? Wait, what kind of incentive does he have? If he's going to be getting $1 billion, what incentive does he have to have anybody, you know, be taken
Well,
care
precisely,
of?
And this is something I've mentioned in the past, but again, it bears mentioning. If you read Adam Smith, if you read The Wealth of Nations, and, you know, before you start, you need to get some little toothpicks, then sort of break them into thirds, take two of them, and you'll need four in all because you got to prop up each side of your eyelid. Because you will go to sleep. But if you read Adam Smith, you will find that his version of capitalism is a scenario in which the people making the stuff have a, not necessarily equal, but a similar stake in the game as the guy running the company.
Yes.
Because the guy running the company is at risk too.
Mm-hmm.
Because his wealth, his capital, is at risk.
Yes.
Well, the insurance company CEOs and the CEOs of Morgan Stanley and Bear Stearns and
Goldman Sachs.
Sure, the rest of those sluggards. Or for that matter, Rupert Murdoch or the family that runs the New York Times. You know, any major corporation, the people running that show... They are not at risk.
Mm-mm.
And so it doesn't matter if it goes up, it goes down. I mean, look, the numbers prove it. The economy was going down the toilet. The corporations were not doing as well. CEO salaries still went up. Man, good work if you can get it.
It is. It's amazing. They can sit there. When they're so super rich, like back in the Depression, you know, I mean, I got into the argument with this, libertarian, he used to be a teacher at the university and Milwaukee, one of these kind of libertarian Chicago, you know, University of Chicago offshoots kind of thing. And, he wrote a book and I, you know, he's a friend of my friend, like brother from another mother, and I started talking to him about the depression, and he didn't see any of this stuff coming. He was like, oh, no. And, you know, the thing is when any time that the incentive is for somebody to, you know, get more and have more, it doesn't matter if the market goes up or down. During the depression, the people that were rich only got richer because they could only buy up everything else for cheap because they have so much money, they can never spend it. This is, you know, I hate to sound like a maniac, but, you know, you make $400 million in your lifetime, boom, you're done working. That's it, you're done. If you want to do a new investment, you can do 10%, 20%, but that's it. You can't sit there and use any kind of power like that, because when you have billions of dollars, Bob, these people, generations and generations and generations of them. Look at the Vanderbilts. Look at all the old robber barons from back in the day. All those families are still the mega wealthy of this country.
Well, look at Richard Mellon Scaife.
Oh, yeah.
You know, here's a pig that's of no particular talent. He just happened to, you know, be, you know, born on third, thinking he hit a triple.
Yep.
And so his days are so empty and vacuous that he spent the 1990s just trying to torment the president of the United States. I don't know what he wanted out of Bill Clinton. Did he want him to just put a gun in his mouth? I don't know what Richard Mellon Scaife wanted.
Yeah. Well, that's what, I mean, you look at them smears that they're doing with Obama now. Who do you think's financing all that? You know, these people are paid to go. I mean, they pay people to go out and smear people.
Look at the Amundsen Foundation, the Amundsen family. Look at, who did Peter mention the other night? Bolthouse? You know, the juice? These people spend their vast amounts of money financing organizations that have nothing as their goal except hating people for how they have sex.
Bolthouse, I don't know. I ain't buying that anymore. Forget that.
Yeah. I don't see the stuff, but apparently it's big elsewhere. So yeah.
Yeah.
Every drop of Bolthouse juice goes to help hate gay people.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Nice.
Interesting.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah. It's like that. Like if you ever get a fresh juice, there's some places that they sell fresh juice. It only lasts 2 or 3 days. Bolthouse, they pasteurize it, so it lasts longer. But it looks like it's fresh juice, kind of thing. Yeah, it's, you know, forget it. I'm done with them. That's ridiculous.
But the thing is, you know, I'm not a communist, because I'm enough of a social realist to realize that there are. Yeah, well, like doctrine, okay? You mentioned, you know, nice living, whatever. The doctors in the UK aren't exactly standing in the soup line. They live well.
Yeah.
And the same could be said here.
Yeah.
I had occasion back when my mom was in intensive care for 7 months at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, to sit down and talk with some residents, because, you know, they were the ones who were doing her care. You know, basically, the people who were really practicing medicine, because they were so new at it, they really hadn't gotten it right yet. And my mom was dying proof of it. But I got to talk to them some, and I said, you know, what are you going to do with your world? What are you going to do with your life? And he says, well, you know, this is my ICU rotation, and then I'll do the blah blah, and then I'll do the blah blah, and on and on and on. I said, yeah, but when you get done, he said, well, I figure I'll work till I'm like 45, 50, and then I'm gonna quit, and I'm gonna go and do something I want to do. I said, you don't want to be doing this? He says, no. I'm doing this for the. He said, I'm doing this for the money.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And, you know, there are those people out there that get to a point where they can knock off, and at, you know, 55 years old, they go and volunteer their time because they've got the wherewithal to do it, assisting on a dig on the in a Mayan ruin somewhere.
Yeah.
I think that would be a beautiful thing to do.
Yeah, me too.
Médecins sans frontières, Doctors Without Borders. You know, these are doctors who are, you know, really, you know, in the Albert Schweitzer mold, who go to hellish places and practice medicine for people who can't have medicine practiced.
Yeah.
Or, no, you know, there are dentists that do the same thing.
Yeah.
And I admire those people.
No, me too. That's what I'm saying. But that's, you know, people that probably go and wind up doing that are people that really just want to, you know, they don't want to deal with insurance guy. You know, a lot of doctors also go and volunteer and do that, you know, because they like to practice medicine and they realize that people, and they realize that they have a gift. I mean, and I don't know about you, but I'll tell you what, if somebody's going to work on my car, okay, for me, I want them to really love to do that.
Yeah. The people who do the best, well, it's the same thing my dad said to me, Albert. He said, my dad was a furnace operator.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to say, boy, I'm one of the luckiest people in the world. Because I get up every morning and I say, goody, I get to go to work today. Because he said, don't mistake, I come home swearing and sweating and cussing about what we went through with that furnace. But he said, I love every minute of it.
There you go. You know, exactly.
How many people in America can say that?
Yeah, exactly. I'll tell you what, nurses can't. Doctors really can't. You know, I mean.
Can a Mexican lettuce picker say that?
Yeah.
You know, the so-called illegal immigration crisis was generated by American business who didn't want to pay decent wages to American people. You know, George Bush, they're doing jobs that Americans won't do. You know what? If lettuce picking happened at 15 or 16 bucks an hour and came with some health care and maybe a retirement, there would be a line around the block to pick lettuce.
Well, I'll tell you what. Anybody who's done any gardening knows that, I mean, I know it's a little different, but still, it's, you know, you get to walk around.
My garden went to hell because I got sick and everything, so there's no garden again this year. But, you know, the last one that I had, that was my joy. It was absolutely my bliss to walk around and look at the plants and, you know, prop something back up or pull the sucker off the tomato plant or, pull off the little stunted pepper so the bigger pepper would get even better. That kind of stuff. Yeah. Making sure the cucumbers were pulled before the zucchini. Oh, Jesus, zucchini.
Yeah, zucchini. Oh, I'm not growing zucchini ever again.
Don't. You know, I warned you. You know, you plant one zucchini plant and you can feed the freaking neighborhood on it. We'll have zucchini bread and zucchini pickles and fried zucchini. There's a lot you can do with zucchini, but it's still a finite number. And before the zucchini crop is over, you're done. You've done everything with a zucchini that, you know, you can do that John Ashcroft wouldn't object to.
Zucchini is amazing, but I can't grow that anymore. It's too much. Too much. If you pick zucchini, you'd have to get another $3 an hour at least, to be fair.
Yeah.
But that's the whole thing. It's like we really got to just refocus our perceptions. Like we can't be, you know, you can't have somebody, you know, just in it for the profit. You know, people should be able, and this is the thing with education too. You know, man, a lot of people don't think in the typical way. So they don't, I mean, not that they're stupid. They just, you know, people that are mechanically inclined. All my friends are mechanically inclined, right? They go to special ed classes. Now, special ed, why? Because they weren't good at reading or they didn't like this or they were bored with it. And so they would go to these classes and be subject, you know, separate from everybody else. And then they'd go to the, you know, the mechanical courses and the, you know, carpentry courses and stuff like that. But, you know, school should be like teaching people like not how much money you can make. You know, because I did the same thing. I mean, I was sucked into that whole way of thinking. But it shouldn't be what, you know, how much money you make. It's like, what do you love to do? You know, why should someone become a mechanic just because it makes money when they really love to play the violin? And they got a gift. You know, and if somebody's got a gift for something, shouldn't we want to see these gifts? I don't know. How do we know that somebody that we, you know, like in the inner city isn't going to cure some disease, isn't going to come up with some idea? You know?
The connective threads are so, you know, the guy that winds up playing the violin, the guy walks past the guy playing the violin. He's so moved by the music from the violin, it makes him think about the vast majesty of life. And he goes home and he tells his kid about it. And the kid says, you know, you're right, Pop. And the kid grows up and the kid cures cancer. And yeah.
You know, people love doing what they're doing because, that's how I have to look at it. You know, My brother's in the same boat. He works jobs he hates. You know, my wife, I know she loves to do what she does, and that's a good thing. My mother used to love what she does, and then she got too high up and got with the politics of all this crap and people with money. And, you know, I mean, and, you know, I don't know. I've talked to, I remember when I used to travel a lot, you know, I remember talking to doctors. I remember talking to this, you know, he's this black guy. I was sitting there talking to him and sitting at a bar. We're sitting there chatting, waiting for our planes. And I'm like, well, you know, where are you from? He's like, oh, Canada. I'm like, yeah, what do you do up there? He's like, I'm a doctor. But he didn't have this air about him.
I'm a doctor, yes.
I'm a doctor, yes. Mm-hmm. Can you sit over, you know, away, commoner? And that's what happens, man. A lot of people, like, they get like this holier than this God complex, and they, like, forget, like, they need a heart. You know, that's why there is malpractice, because people, you know, people.
But that's also, but bear in mind that's a deliberate act, Albert, of the medical education system as well. Because, while, for instance, if a fraternity on a college campus has a paddling ritual, okay, that will be deemed hazing, and the college will shut the fraternity down.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, however, the college itself is running a medical school where medical interns and residents are worked 18-hour days and sleep 2 hours at a time on cots in a closet somewhere in the hospital. And then are expected to get up, drop dead exhausted, and go and give adequate, life-saving care to a patient.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the worst hazing?
Exactly. I mean, it's like, you know, do you really want the money? And then, you know, that's in turn what happens. I'll never forget it. I mean, one of the shows I do like on NPR is This American Life.
Yeah.
And This American Life, they did this interview with this girl, and she's saying, you know, her parents were Mexican, and she happened to be brought here when she was like 2. Well, she was going trying to get into UCLA, and they didn't give her any money because she wasn't technically a citizen and all this other stuff. Man, you know, all she ever wanted to be was a doctor. She played doctor. That's what she's here for on this planet, is she wants to be compassionate and heal people. You know, she wants to help people. It's like, you know, it's the same thing with firemen. Man, you should pay firemen at the same time, but, you know, firemen, they want to help people. You know, I don't know about police. I can't say. I don't know this cop. But there are good cops out there, but there are a lot of them. But, you know, at the same time, you know, people get into these jobs. Why do you want to do this? And everybody asks them, why do you want to do this? You know, it's all for the money. All for the money. And I think that whole thing has to change.
Dr. Bill O'Brien, our colleague here who had a show for a while, and by the way, maybe is bringing back something that I think is he's going to do a new project for the Horn that I think people are going to be just fascinated with. I've read where he's going with it, and it's going to be amazing. He's a college administrator and professor as well, and he was telling me that when people come to school now, they don't want to learn to actually do something, whether it's be an expert in history or, you know, an academic of some sort, or go and, you know, no, they want to go into the service. They want to be a financial analyst.
They want to be in marketing.
Yeah, which is, you know, which is a fancy way of saying I want to get paid for doing next to nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know,
well, what do CEOs do, Bob? What does a CEO of a health insurance company like Aetna or whatever that gets $1.1 billion, what does he do for society that he deserves $1.1 billion worth of power?
Well, I guess that just goes to show that we're both profoundly plebeian, because I can't figure it. You know, you give me the CEO of an insurance company or someone who teaches calculus and can actually get people to understand Calc 1, Calc 2, and Calc 3.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those people are fairly rare.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'll give the calculus teacher the $1.1 billion, and I'll give the insurance CEO the $60,000 a year the calc professor would be lucky to get.
Yeah, no doubt. Oh, man. That's what I mean. Our whole priorities, the priorities have to be, you know, and they are. I think they are. You know, I like to think they are. I mean, a neighbor of mine needed some help today, and he needed a ride down to the bank and this and that and this. And so I gave it to him, and we started talking about politics. And, you know, I've never talked to him outside of that. And I live in a small little town, and I'll tell you right now, you know, he is sick and tired of all of this stuff. I mean, you know, yeah, we got the floods, and my house happened to be all right, but, you know, a lot of people are here, you know. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Insurance-wise, You know, these insurance companies, they're parasites. That's all.
Oh, and by the way, if anybody dares to file an insurance claim who didn't have the federal, and see, that's another thing about the insurance industry, flood insurance. You have to have flood insurance that you buy through the government and pay through the nose for, because the insurance companies won't write it.
Yeah.
So all over the upper Midwest in the Mississippi Valley and the little tributary rivers and whatever, there is already an army, I tell you, Albert, an army of insurance lawyers on staff, on standby, just sitting there staring at the phone, waiting for it to ring, and they pick it up, and they go, we don't pay.
Well, man, that's the incentive. You know,
insurance companies are in the business of taking money in and not paying it out.
Exactly. You know, but you got to remember, Bob, this is how we count. This is how we account the economy. Every time somebody gets cancer, GDP goes up. Okay, every time a tree is cut down, the GDP goes up. The way we measure our economic, you know, health is twisted.
That's because we don't know how to do or make anything anymore. We have to make money out of human misery and out of destruction.
Yeah.
Because we don't know how to create anymore. The creative energies of the United States have been sent over to places where 12-year-old kids are chained to tables.
Amen. And that's just, to make crap
to support the $1.2 billion salary of the CEO, who isn't doing anything.
Huh. And it's, and you know, it's really funny. I know I've been, you know, there's been many times where I've been a loss at words, and, you know, you were a little better than me. And I hear times where you're a loss of words. Now I hear times where Randy Rose is a loss of words. Everybody's just like, I can't believe that we have the audacity to prop up a system I try to watch my mouth, Bob, but, you know, there's just words that need to be said that you can't.
I don't know. Maybe we need a sliding scale. Maybe that's the answer, Albert. Maybe we need a sliding scale. You need a new tire, and it's $125.
Mm-hmm.
If the CEO needs a new tire, it's $9.8 million. Same tire.
Yep. Yeah, that works. Because that works, you know. I mean, they're sitting there under Barack Obama. You and I are going to get around $1,200 additional in our taxes, in our income tax returns. Fine. You want to borrow that money and use it and put interest on it and not pay it? That's fine. Okay, fine. I don't have a problem paying tax. I'm not anti-tax to a point, as long as we get services for that. You know, you can't just get taxed on nothing. You know, at the same, you know, I don't want to be a serf, you know, who the
I want my tax money, among other things, to go for roads that are smooth that cause me not to have to buy new tires.
Amen. Exactly. Roads that are smooth, infrastructure, power infrastructure, you know, bridges that don't collapse when you're driving over them. I couldn't imagine.
I mean, there's the local shopping center that we go to where the Kroger is.
Yeah.
I go to Kroger because they're union workers. There's a pothole in the road leading to it that is 4 feet across by 3 feet wide by every bit of 2.5 feet deep. I mean, this is the abyss. You know, you can stare in and it stares back. And for a while there, they tried to keep people out of it by parking a buggy in it. And, you know, like two thirds of the buggy only stuck up out of the hole. Well, I was over there the other day and the buggy's laying off in the weeds, squashed flat. But, you know, can't pave it.
Oh, God. With all that.
I mean, the hole is, honest to God, deeper than most. A car would get stuck in it if its tire went.
I'm sure to be to pour in some concrete. You know, that's good for the tire and, you know, axle industries and shocks and suspension and all that other stuff, you know.
Not to mention the chiropractors.
Chiropractors do miracles on me. My guy's pretty good anyway. But, you know, like we were saying, you know, Barack Obama is going to give us, under his plan, we're going to get an additional $1,200, right? Now, under McCain's, we get around two. Now, if you sit there and you slide up the scale all the way up to the top, right, John McCain's going to give them an additional, the super rich, that Bush has already given 80% of his tax cut crap plan, win. He's already given 80% of that crap goes to them. McCain's going to give him an additional $250,000. And what's Barack going to do? He's going to charge him $750,000. Now, you tell you what, there's a start. You think that the people that make that kind of money are going to miss $750,000? Seriously? $750,000? They make $750,000 faster than you could say $750,000. You know what I'm saying? These are the kinds of things that, you know, these Republicans and all this other, they keep voting against their own best interest. You know, I'm not trying to say, you know, that's going to solve anything, but we get tax cuts in a time of war. We're getting tax breaks and cuts and tax rebate checks that we're going to have to pay back later. I mean, and at the same time, we got all this insurance to pay for. We got all this other stuff to pay for. I'm telling you, you know, this is what I mean. You know, people, we have to do a 180-degree turn. You know, there's an iceberg. I've been arguing with people. I told you that. You know, I've been arguing with people all weekend long, you know, this and that, and all these other Republican, you know, information agents that I'm sure get paid to do what they're doing because nobody could be this stupid, like, willfully. Anyway, you know, you sit there and you talk with them and you try to, you know, not reach through the computer and just choke them to death. But, you know, they just can't get their heads wrapped around that, this country needs changes, but he's going to make it the wrong way. We should go, you know. It's like what? You see an iceberg the size of a small moon, and so you say full speed ahead? That's what you do? That makes sense? That makes any sense whatsoever?
No, I know. I know. Just got an email rolling in from our pal Cindy. She says, as far as the talent pool is concerned, the longer it goes on, the more we go down the tubes. All that trained, skilled workforce is going to die off and never hand off the knowledge to the younger generation.
Yeah.
And she says the younger generation is faking it. They can't support the nation. They're without the knowledge they will need. America is third world.
Yeah. Well, isn't that what our definition was? Anybody who exports more raw materials than they produce is a third world nation. Something along those lines. There's also other ways to look at that in terms of development and this, but, you know, in another 20 years, this country's bankrupt as it is, and once the realization of our, you know, what is it? I don't even know. I don't even know, Bob. I try to get this number. What is our debt? What is our deficit? It's in the trillions and $11 trillion. And then you hear about our collective debt in this country is around $100 trillion. This is trillion. And then you sit there.
These are monopoly numbers to me.
Exactly. Because, you know, if you add up the whole world, it's only worth around $17 trillion or something along those lines. So, I mean, but we, you know, in our mortgages and our this and our cars and our everything, we're in so much debt in this country. And one day the bill collector's got to come, doesn't he? What are they going to do? Once the illusion crumbles,
now, see, I had a perfectly good bumper set up for the end of our phone call, and now you're going to make me run off and find Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? Yeah, what are we going to do? I don't know. But I do got to roll on, Albert.
All right, brother.
All right.
We'll talk with you later.
That was a dandy. Thanks, brother.
Always.
Later. We're upside down. There's no getting around it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yeah, hello.
Oh, Bob. Hey, it's Sandra.
Sandra!
You know, I only caught part of your show, but I just called because I really have to comment on that tomato head that passed away. And listen, I don't mean to speak ill of the dead, but I will. One less Republican to hassle Democrats on TV. I'm sorry to say it, but I just thought, oh, well.
Yeah. No, you're not the first, nor will you be the last to say that, Sandra. And
this whole, trying to make him out to be some sort of unbiased, come on.
Horse
the
feathers.
The guy would throw down hideous questions to the Democrat and just let Dick Cheney roll.
Oh, yeah. We've played clips of it, and it's all out there. You know, look, I'm sure Crooks and Liars has a bunch of it. It's all over YouTube. You can go and see how balanced Tim Russert was.
And not only that, I remember we spoke before, because one of my main things about Tim Russert, when he was testifying at the Scooter Libby trial, he was so proud of the fact that he asked the permission of the powerful if he can speak to what they say to him. And if they say no, He says, okay. I'm like, that's not a journalist. I don't know what the hell that is.
No, I saw an article where he was mentioned in the same sentence with Edward R. Murrow.
Please.
You know, I wanted to print the story out just so I could wad it up in a ball with a rock around it and throw it through a window.
Well, no, but it's just, you know, it's like rewriting history, and I don't care if he did work for Democrats early in his life. He became just a tool seduced by the power and a stenographer. And, you know, if that's the best that we can do now in the media, you know, God help us. You know, I don't care. Tim Russell was just another multimillionaire media star. And for the life of me, I think about this report I read about health care in England. The poorest English person has better health care than the richest people here.
Yeah.
I guess he proves a point, because that fool dropped dead. How do you drop dead when you're a multimillionaire? Sorry, I just don't understand.
No, that's what I brought. That's the context I brought it up in, Sandra. The fact that it was preventable. All he had to do was go and demand the testing.
No, and the thing is, he could demand and pay. And what that tells me is that our system is just rotten to the core, because even money won't make it work properly. And that's because it's just for profit, and it's for sick care, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sick of these prominent people dying, and there is never any discussion about, ooh, you know, they always talk about Ted Kennedy. I mean, he's not dead yet. But, you know, the whole thing, he'll get the best care. And it's like, what does that sound like? He'll get the best care. I mean, it's like a running narrative, which is saying that the rest of us, unfortunately, won't get the best care. But, of course, Ted Kennedy will. And they talk about it as a matter of fact. And it's just so cold and awful. And so when that fool dropped dead, I was like, what was I supposed to do? I could care less. I just thought, well, one less hassle for the Democrats.
Yeah,
I know.
No. Please, Sandra, don't maintain any illusions. They'll put whoever they put in that chair, and I see, I've seen Tom Brokaw mentioned a couple of times, and people saying, well, that makes sense. You know, because he's not anchoring the evening news anymore, and he needs something to do, and he's tired of building ships in a bottle and stuff like that now that he's semi-retired. But he'll do the same thing. Because, again, you're talking about for-profit health care, which I think is a contradiction in terms. It's the for-profit illness manipulation or whatever.
Well, I mean, they just
where this is concerned, we're talking about the for-profit media.
Yeah, well, no, but the whole idea of that horrible Brian Williams, is that his name?
Yeah, I call him Brain Williams.
He is such a right-wing tool. This guy brags that he don't miss Rush Limbaugh. You know, he's always talking about his connection to, you know, race car driving. You know, just it's just a nightmare. And he's supposed to be put up as some sort of spokesperson for the media in this country. I can't stand that, Brian Williams.
I can't stand any of them, okay?
And the Andrea Mitchell, we already been down that slope.
Foreign affairs correspondent. I guess she thinks that Appalachia is one of those foreign places she covers. Yeah.
And Katie Couric, another possible. I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah, what does the guy call her, Cutesy Couric?
I don't know. But, yeah. I mean, the way they were just sort of, you know, the Midwest is drowning, and all we saw was that tomato head wall-to-wall coverage. I'm like, what kind of masturbatory crap is this?
It's,
you know,
exactly,
I mean?
That, Sandra. That's exactly what it is.
It was just hideous. I just felt, I'm like, okay, dude dropped dead. Yeah, it's a bit shocking, blah, blah, blah. In the meanwhile, you know, we got a Katrina times 20 going on up in here, and you know what I mean?
Well, you mentioned Katrina, and I'm reminded of something I saw. A comment from Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm.
Mm.
She said, we have lost 400,000 jobs in 7 years. And she said, that is, in its own right, a Katrina of its own sort.
Yeah, outrageous.
And I thought, wow, that's, you know, and, because I don't think she was denigrating the miseries of the people on the Gulf Coast. I think she was trying to identify. And now you've got, it's more dispersed, but you've got something similar happening in the upper Midwest. And in both the upper Midwest and on the Gulf Coast, you've got a similar exacerbator of the problem. And that is, once again, the topic that I started with, the damned insurance companies.
Oh, no. I mean, they're like a blight, a parasite, a cancer, you know, in the health of this nation, insurance companies, because they're not, you know, they keep making untold profits, and they're never held to account, you know? In fact, none of these corporations are held to account. I'm just, you know, I'm sort of beyond exasperated, but anyway, I just was, the Tim Russert thing was really getting to me, because they talk about it as if us average folks give a F. I don't, you know what? I don't care. In fact, it makes me irritated, you know?
Well, I did
a funeral, and just, you're dead. Life happens, you know? Shit.
Yeah, I get agitated with all of these celebrity funerals, if you will. Because
I thought I was gonna poke my eye out with an ice pick with the Reagan orgy, that orgy that went on with that.
Well, and that, yeah, maybe you missed that part. I've invented a new word, Sandra, for these overly pious, hypocritical, BS-laden, week-long the death parades. I've come up with a new word. It's a eulogy.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. No, because the fact you're gonna have some sort of public funeral for this tomato head. I mean, are you kidding me? On MSNBC, you know.
What happened to decorum?
I don't know, but to me, I find the whole thing really quite disturbing. This was
they'll probably have a jumbotron at it.
But this is a person on TV, and they're, you know, they're talking as if it was a state funeral. It's really bizarre. Come on, it's definitely out there, and I don't think they realize how out there, because they're so insolent in their little bubble of cocktail parties and homes on the Hamptons, and then trying to report to us. It's a joke. I mean, you don't have to pay attention to it to see that it's a joke, which is probably why their ratings are going down and down and down.
And it's because it's incestuous. There we go. That's what I was looking for. It's incestuous what they're doing.
Yep. Yeah. Well, masturbatory, incest. I mean, we can come up with all kinds of, lovely analogies.
Because this is, again, just to work with the running theme, Sandra, this in its own right is a form of insurance, because all the people who get up there and engage in this public display of so-called grief and piety are only doing it because they want to try to ensure the fact that someone will do it for them, as if it will matter when they're dead.
Well, that's the thing, you know, but it matters. I don't know who it matters to. It's like a huge, you know, the award shows, which I also, you know, hate. I'm just like a hater, but I can't stand those either, because it's like I don't want to see these pricks pat themselves on the back for their little horrible movies. Same deal. Except they're not reporting on wars, you know.
Right, and they're not helping wars get started. Let's make something abundantly clear here. I hold Tim Russert partially responsible for the damn war and occupation.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like these people are not accountable, and we're supposed to celebrate and wring our hands when they croak.
And when he had a chance, to be a patriot about Valerie Plame, well, you know, what was it Valerie Plame was doing? She was managing a bunch of covert agents keeping an eye on Iran's nuclear program.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if I got that right. So if we decide to bomb the snot out of Iran and start sending little poor people flying into the sky in millions of pieces, Tim Russert's corpse will have something to do with that.
Yeah, not only that, when that fool was over in Afghanistan, you know, barely keeping it together, I'm like, you sanctimonious F. All these people around you are just dying, and you're going to shed a few tears for your friend and pal, Tim. I mean, the whole spectacle was just foul. And I these bloggers who are like giving praises to him, I'm sick of them too. I'm like, what's up? I mean, you don't have to say anything horrible, but the sort of on the left side too, it's just, what is this?
Oh, he was a great guy and a wonderful dad. And okay, so he was a good dad. So
yeah,
what?
So are millions and millions of other Americans who are minding their business and trying to get the hell on here, you know?
Yeah, well, I imagine, I don't know. It's kind of like the inquiry that's at the heart of the book of Job, Sandra, where Satan says to God, you know, Job, oh yeah, he loves you and everything, but look at everything you've given him. take it all away and see what happens. Well, you know, Job held up under the pressure. But you know what? It's real easy, relatively speaking, to be a good dad when you never have to take money into account. Oh,
exactly.
What's that, son? You want to go to Boston College? Okay, let me write the check.
Yeah.
What's that? You want to celebrate your graduation in Italy? Let me write the check.
Well, no, and the whole thing is when they were getting, that's another thing I noticed, because I'm like that, when they were getting commentary from the various media people, so-and-so on a barge in the French Riviera vacationing, you know, Bob Schieffer, I'm like, and so-and-so who was vacationing over here and over there, I'm like, you know, these people are not the media. The media should not have $10 million a year payouts or be able to vacation on a barge in the south of France. Please.
Oh, do pass me another truffle.
No, it was just, and it's sort of, for the life of me, the fact that they are so myopic, they can't even see the sick humor of it. It's like, you guys are a joke. And I think more and more Americans realize, you know, really,
hey,
they have to. I mean, if I do.
The visual of Bob Schieffer in a Speedo on a barge in the south of France is enough to keep me off food for another 6 weeks.
No, man. I just was like, you know, just it's just sort of as a matter of fact, and with all these fools, because they're all vacationing now, and, you know, whoever was on their way to Paris, it's just like, well, you know, it must be nice. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, what? You know, there's a lot of neat stuff in America. Why not see a little bit of the country? Oh, well, you know, but nah, we can't expect them to actually care about their own country.
Well, you know, speaking of that, I just spent a couple of days at Big Sur. You know, I live here in California.
Yeah.
And so I'm lucky, you know, there's beautiful places in California that I try to go to, but the gas is starting to do me in. But, yeah, I just don't, it's just more the sort of the class issues involved in all that, and we're supposed to just accept it and be okay and assume these people are working towards our interests? No, Bob.
No,
I don't believe it, and I'm sick of it being put out as if it is. Say what you represent, and I'll be fine. You know what I'm saying?
Sure I do. Sure I do. And, you know, come on, we're talking about talking heads here, okay? Katie Couric, $15 million a year for reading a teleprompter and being cute?
Yeah, it's mind numbing.
You know, if there's $15 million of work being done on the CBS Evening News, it's being done by the line producers. It's being done by the writers and the editors. It's being done by the field reporters. All she has to do is sit there and read and be cute.
No, and the media is so, and they're also, I don't know if they have a Stockholm syndrome or not, because so many of their members were slaughtered in that war, too. Do you know that?
Yes.
Loads.
Yes.
Loads of them were killed over there. And it's just sort of like, what's up? You know, you would think that in itself would warrant them being a bit more scrutinizing, but I don't know. They seem to be totally, I don't know what's going on with the media.
Well, what's going on is that for-profit is going on. I mean,
I don't mean
to reduce this to overly simplistic terms, but there's that line between the corporate for-profit media, especially the big three networks, want the evening news to make money. Now, once upon a time, the networks sought to make their money on the ads that they ran inside their TV shows.
Yeah.
And the evening news was not deemed to be a TV show. It was actually deemed to be a public service. So if it could break even, that would be cool.
Yeah, I know. And then 60 Minutes showed a profit, and that was the end of that, right?
Well, yeah. And over at ABC, when Rune Arledge, who was, you know, the father of the wide world of sports, got hold of the news division, you know, that's another one of those moments.
Mm.
Yeah, the whole if it bleeds it leads syndrome. You know, 17 people killed in a roller coaster accident in Poughkeepsie today, and or whatever. And that leads in front of a story of some medical breakthrough or an economic decision of profound impact. But no, if it bleeds it leads.
Well, no, and the fact that Obama is just slightly ahead of McCain also speaks volumes about the media, because there's no way. Obama should be 25 points ahead of this fool.
Now, wait, Sandra. There has been polling out this week that shows Obama as much as 19 points in front.
Oh, really? Because I've been looking at the, I think it was a Pew or one of these ones. I'm like nine, you know, it was like 4 points or he was lagging, you know, amongst the white men. Anyway, it was making it out as if it's close. And this should not be close. I'm sorry. He should be really far ahead of McCain because McCain is imploding. I've never seen anything like it.
But bear in mind, you and I both know there is no neutrality. And the media will do everything in their power because it is to their best profit-oriented interest to have this be a horse race.
They have a lot of business in front of Congress with their other interests. You know, it's also effed up. I can't even believe it.
Well, hey, let's you and me take a quick trip to Texas because I just know you're going to love this.
Okay.
They had their Texas Repiglicking convention this past weekend.
Oh God.
And. There were buttons for sale there from a company that boasts about providing patriotic and Repiglicking products. I'm sorry, Republican. They sell a button that says "Life's a bitch." Has a picture of Hillary Clinton that says "Life's a bitch." Don't vote for one. Well,
come on.
This weekend at the Repiglicking convention in Texas, they were selling a button. It's a black background with white letters. And it's really more text than I'm used to seeing on a button, and it's probably more than most Republicans can comprehend, except for this one. This is easy for them because of the way they are. Yeah, the Texas Repiglicans were selling buttons that said, "If Obama is president, will we still call it the White House?"
Oh, you know, I can't even tell you how puerile that is. Come on. I mean, that's not even modelly, you know, because I'm always good up for a good racist joke. That's not even funny.
No, but it's what we're going to get a steady diet of.
Oh, God, that is so pedestrian.
And I can't wait to see what the wing nuts do after tomorrow. I got an email from our pal Juanita who informed me that tomorrow is the day that Michelle is guest hosting for the entire hour on The View.
Oh, is she doing it for the week or just the day?
I'm not sure. I know it's tomorrow. I'm sure there will be right-wing hissies oplenty.
Well, now, what is she going to do with that room temperature IQ white girl that's on there? What's her name?
Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Oh, God, she is so, wow. Talking about affirmative action.
Well, I don't know. Elizabeth may call in sick. I mean, it's bad enough they're making her work with, you know, Whoopi and, I mean, but three black women on the panel? That'll be more, her head would explode.
Why? Who else is on there? I've lost track.
I can't remember.
They got another negress on there?
Yes, they do.
No way! They're not gonna have three.
Yeah, they got it's Whoopi. It's Whoopi and Joy, and I'm almost ashamed to even know this stuff.
Oh, right, that conservative kind of black chick. I know who you're talking about. No, it's gonna be three niggers and a cracker.
A Jewish lady. Joy Behar's Jewish.
Oh, damn it! They really gonna be on and cracking.
And like I said, I think poor little waspy Elizabeth Hasselbeck is just going to sit over there and vibrate.
Oh, and then don't forget Barbara, who I love black men. She's going to be there too, huh? Damn.
I think this could be
fun.
You know,
Barbara Waters and her affair with the black senator.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh, this is going to be a Negro fest on there. I might have to tune in, Bob. Might have to.
Don't do that to me, Sandra. I about shot grape juice out of my nose on that one.
Listen. Oh, well, that's a good way to end the call. That's heck of funny, man. Okay, listen, I got to go.
All right, you take care, Sandra. Always good hearing from you. Bye now. Oh, I love Sandra. Golly, Moses. Let's see. Let's roll along. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, you got Dave up here in Humboldt, California.
How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing pretty well, and I so much enjoy your program because I know so much is so very wrong right now, and you tackle it. You tackle it on so many fronts, and you do it like a pit bull on steroids, and I much appreciate that.
Well, God, we got to get a giggle out every now and then, because otherwise it's all warm bath and razor blades, brother.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, one of my key issues is what's happened to our media, and you're addressing that too. Like Tim Russert, I'm sure he did some good things. I'm sure he had some good points.
Sure, his family loved him. Yeah.
He loved his family, yes. But, you know, I have sat through that any number of times, and he could never raise any question on the subject of rigged elections. He could never interview anybody on unanswered questions about 9/11. He just couldn't do anything like that. And so I recall the debate that he monitored there when he allowed one question, I believe, maybe two, to Dennis Kucinich. What was his question?
Well, I saw something about that. Maybe it was today or yesterday, Dave. When he had his chance to shine at one of the presidential pageants, he, instead of asking Dennis Kucinich about universal health care, Tim Russert asked Dennis Kucinich about UFOs.
Is it true that you saw a UFO? Totally.
So, and then when it came around for a chance to ask a meaningful question to Barack Obama, Tim Russert asked him about Louis Farrakhan. And so Barack Obama denounced Louis Farrakhan. So Tim Russert asked him a question again about Louis Farrakhan. So Barack Obama denounced Farrakhan again. And that since Tim Russert was a hardcore, highly integrity-driven journalist, he asked a third question about Louis Farrakhan.
Yeah, that's what we've got. That's what our media is allowed to do. If you'd like to stay up there in the big chair drawing the big bucks, then play along. Go along with this administration. The ones that have been put in place by neocons who rig elections, who steal the White House, who steal the Congress. Play ball, and you'll be allowed to be a part of it. You'll even get the big bucks. You'll have a big house and a swimming pool. Don't ask questions we don't want to have you asking. They understand that. So that's their choice. Do I do an honest job and suffer the consequences, or do I play ball with them? And so there you have the 10 wrestlers, and they're on every channel you turn to. You know? A little bit here and there. We still have a head-on radio network. We still have some pieces of Air America. There's places where some people will address reality and not expect to draw a piece of the big crooked pie. But there's such a desperate need for
You know what? We're not drawing a piece of the big crooked pie, but I would be a bald-faced liar, Dave, if I didn't say that I'd like for us all to have a little, just a few flakes of the crust once in a while.
Yeah, so if you get a call and they're saying, all right, all you have to do is get off our case and we'll throw some bucks your way, that puts you in the interesting bind.
Well, that gives you the moral dilemma, and I'd like to think at that trip to the crossroads that I'd have enough integrity to say no. I know that Mark Levine, for instance, has been there. I think it was Salem Broadcasting Network said, Mark Levine, we love you. We'd love to give you a show if you'll just lay off George Bush.
Yeah, right.
Mark told him to take a hike.
Well, and I have every confidence that you would do the same thing, Bob, but you suffer the consequences. I know you don't live high on the hog, and you have to live off of what you're able to get from people that can't afford to survive on their own.
Well,
the things that contribute.
Well, most everything that comes this way via listener contributions goes into keeping us going. Keeping the horn going, that sort of thing. I mean, I'm sitting here. I really want my son to go to this seminar tomorrow in Morgantown, but it's 150 miles away. It's 150 miles back, and gas is $4.10 a gallon. And I'm sweating bullets on how I'm gonna. I know I can get there. I just don't know if I don't know if I can roll all the way downhill getting back.
Yeah.
It's that's so very frustrating, and I'm sure some people will, Bob, why don't you go get a job? Well, okay, I'll go get a job, but then the horn goes away. It's a hell of a choice. What we're doing here is not and I think I speak for everybody associated with Horn from Guy to Mark to Peter to John to me. to all the moderators in the chat room and the brilliant work that the News Ninjas do and the gorgeous video work that ELO does, the blogging. Nobody here is doing it looking to get rich, but everybody is doing it because they perceive that there is a profound need for it to be done, that somebody's got to say, somebody's got to write, somebody's got to do this stuff because no one else is.
Well, I do believe you're on it because I think our country is in jeopardy. Like, it's hard to conceive how badly threatened this nation is with its future. It's like I'm seeing a country that, for the most part, is going down a rat hole before our eyes.
Well, see, Dave, I understand what you're saying, but I think there's a deeper question, and that is the verb tense. You say you see a country that's going down the tubes before our eyes. And my question is that the wrong verb tense? Has it already gone? Are we past the point of no return? Are we past being able to fix stuff? Are there so many impediments in our way, Dave, that we'll never get through them? I have great hopes for Barack Obama, but I wonder if having to deal with a Congress that is Democrat and Republican alike on the corporate take for the most part, I wonder how much we can get done. You know, Bill Clinton came into office with high hopes, and the two things he wanted to do, he wanted to get the military to stop early on in his term. He wanted to get the military to stop its overt apartheid against people based on how they have sex, and he wanted to get health care for everybody in America. And Bill Clinton didn't stop Bill Clinton on that. The Congress stopped Bill Clinton on that. Corporate America stopped Bill Clinton on that. Stodgy old homophobes in the Pentagon stopped Bill Clinton on that. You know, they're touting Sam Nunn as a possible running mate for Barack Obama right now. And you know what? Sam Nunn held hearing after hearing after hearing about how dangerous it would be for the queers to be in the military, and took people on tours of submarines and said, "See, they only sleep 16 inches apart. This is why we can't have no homos on our submarines." You know, newsflash for Sam Nunn. They're already on there, buddy.
Well.
So, yeah, I don't know how much can get fixed, Dave. I'm not trying to be, you know, the Ned negative or anything, but I don't know how much we can fix. I don't know how much a president can fix in 4 years or 8 years. Because after the legacy of seeing what happened with Bill Clinton, 8 years of trying to clean up Reagan and Bush One's messes, which he succeeded in doing, 8 years of Barack Obama will get the country fixed again, and then some damn Republican will come along and break it. And it's getting to be a very tiresome cycle.
Well, I don't know about the term Republican will come along. I am convinced right now that these neocons and their high-tech Patriot Act troopers rig elections. Like your caller, Sandy, that was just addressing. Right now, I do believe that Obama is way out in front of McCain. However, they have the ability to jump on these computers in every polling place and flip things around to make it look like Obama and McCain are actually running pretty close. And the people say, well, I don't think they really rig elections, because how did the end up with 51% going in the Congress to the Democrats? Well, we have a Senator Feinstein, a Senator Lieberman. We have a Bill Nelson. We have, I believe, I've seen evidence of it, but I can never reproduce it now, that Democrats, good Democrats, lost 60-some seats in that 2006 election, that it was rigged and rigged badly, but they still left it where it looked like it was a fair election that actually went Democratic. But, you know, it doesn't take an awful lot, Bob, to get me to be looking with a lot of negativism on what our hopes are of pulling this together. I think we got to try. You've got to try.
Sure. No, I'm not running away from it. And like I said, I'm maintaining high hopes and a good deal of optimism for Barack Obama. But I'm a realist, too.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a bottle half empty guy, not a bottle half full.
Well, you know, I even think at times maybe there is some element of character in John McCain. But John McCain knows. He knows how much elections are rigged.
Now, there is not 10 cents worth of character in John McCain. I'm sorry to be a wet blanket, but there's not.
Well, I think that's mostly the time that's what I think, although there's fleeting moments where he has played, you know, he went to Annapolis, didn't he?
Yeah, 894th out of a class of 899.
But he got some training in what character might be all about. Not that we see all that much.
No, he didn't. He had a ton of demerits, and he was constantly in trouble with the administration there.
Well, if he should get some fleeting moment of thinking, I'd like to be honest. I would like to stand up and tell these crooks to head in. That would be the end of John McCain. But we'd be wondering who they handpicked for his vice president. Because
that's
John McCain has got to play ball right now, whether he wants to or not. I think he does want to. I mean, it's easy for him to be a part of what he's a part of.
Well, see, John McCain is 71 years old, Dave. The only way for John McCain to finally outdo his father and his grandfather is to become president of the United States, because both of his father and his grandfather were admirals, and he has never beaten daddy. You've got the same kind of psychoses operating with John McCain that you had operating with George Bush. And, you know, he wants to be president so that he can finally, you know, sort of look at his ancestors and say, well, my friends, I did it. I'm better than daddy.
Yeah, but see, what he'd want, if that were his motivation, he'd like to be known as a great president, one who actually got in there and helped save the country and turn things around and do a lot of good.
Nah, he only has to be as good a president as his daddy and granddaddy were admirals.
I'm just you're suggesting they weren't all that great of admirals.
Nah, nothing special. You know, his daddy, I guess, ran naval operations in Vietnam. That worked out nicely.
He wants to be a president like George Bush is a president.
Right. Yeah. He wants the certificate suitable for framing, Dave. It's the same thing that motivated him to run for Congress. The same thing that motivated him to run for Senate. Same thing that motivated him to bug out on his wife and go marry the beer heiress.
Well, unless I'm totally off to lunch here, I have no question in my mind that these high-tech neocon thieves, criminals that are running our government today fully plan to go on rigging elections, that they fully intend to keep it where they have in power those people that will allow them to go on stealing and taking, and to hell with the poor and to hell with the working people. We want more for the very rich. Those are the people that they want in office, in power. And they're not people that would get elected. They're people that you have to rig elections to put them in power.
Yeah, they've got to be dummied up into office. I get it. Dave, thanks so much, my friend.
Thanks, Bob.
Look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Will do.
All right, take care. Our buddy Dave from Humboldt County, California. Hi, welcome to the program.
Is it me?
It's apparently you.
All right.
What's up, Wayne?
How you doing, pal?
Yeah, I'm all right. Internet seem to be behaving themselves tonight, so, you know, we're ahead of the game.
Yeah, no lightning. No lightning, pal. That lightning's bad stuff.
Well, it is. It is. And it got a little creepy last night.
First, I want to say that I also love Sandra.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's, well.
There's a growing Sandra fan club. You should see the email.
Is there?
Oh, yes.
Well, I want to join.
All right, we'll send you your certificate suitable for framing.
Very good. Very good. Listen, did you by any chance see the article in the paper by our representative, Nick Rahal, Use It or Lose It?
Yes, I did.
Have you talked about
that? No, I have not brought it up. I had it in the stack, I guess, on Friday, and then last night happened, and no, I haven't. But, you know, it deserves to be talked about because I'm an equal opportunity kind of guy. And when he gets something right, you know, I goon on him for mountaintop removal, but he gets some other stuff pretty right, and this is one of them.
Well, he got this right, and I'm proud of him. And, you know, and I can't always say that. And, you know, if anybody's interested in it, just Google the truth about America's energy, and you'll get the report. And this is a special report by the Committee on Natural Resources, the majority staff, which we happen to be at this particular time. And, I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, with all, you know, all you hear on television is, you know, and all these news programs and these right-wing pundits is, you know, if they just let us drill more oil, we could lower prices.
Well, but only if it's in Anwar.
Yeah, only in Anwar. Between 1999 and 2007, the number of drilling permits issued for development on public lands increased by 361%. Yet gasoline prices have also risen dramatically, contradicting the argument that more drilling means lower gasoline prices. There is simply no correlation between the two. And the report is very interesting, and there's graphs and stuff, and I wished I would have shut off the color thing because the graphs cost me one color, you know.
Ooh.
Inkwell.
Yeah, that hurts.
Or, well, it was new when it went in, and after they got done printing it, it says, oh, your color ink is low. But, you know.
Pull it out, give it a shake, and put it back in.
Right. Now, since 2004, the Bureau of Land Management has issued 28,776 permits to drill on public land. In the same time, only 18,954 wells were actually drilled. Oil and gas companies have stockpiled nearly 10,000 extra permits to drill, and they are not using to increase domestic production. Offshore, of the 47.5 million acres of federal land leased by oil and gas companies, only 13 million acres are actually producing oil. Offshore, only 10.5 million of the 44 million leased acres are currently producing oil. Combined, the oil and gas companies hold leases to nearly 68 million acres of federal land that are not producing oil and gas. It goes on to say that the 68 million acres of leased inactive federal land could produce an additional 4.8 million barrels of oil and 44.7 billion cubic feet of natural gas each day. That would nearly double total U.S. production and increase natural gas production by 75%. 4.1 million barrels of oil equals more than six times the estimated peak production of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
Development. Well, there's the snapper. Read that again, please.
4.8 million barrels of oil equals more than six times the estimated peak production from the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. That's Anwar.
And it bears to be mentioned as well that when we talk about leases on public lands, the federal government is getting nothing or next to nothing for the leases.
Exactly.
I mean, if
they're not using the leases that they already have.
If Wayne wants to run off and lease space for a cabin in the Monongahela National Forest, if you're allowed to do it at all, you will pay dearly.
And I would imagine you're not allowed to do it.
On the other hand, if you're an oil company and you say, you know, because you remember when Bill Clinton signed the Roadless Wilderness executive order saying that there were some parts of America that just needed to stay wild and didn't need roads?
Roads. Right.
Yeah. Well, Bush immediately said, screw that. And the reason he said screw that was so that the roads could be cut to get to these federal leases in the wilderness. We threw American Indians off sacred land because of some sort of carbon-based fuel reserves. It was the Southern Shoshone, as a matter of fact, in Nevada. And what this report is saying is that, you know, we've given away these leases for nothing. And they're not, and I mean, you'd almost think that the oil industry would, is the, These are the CEOs of the oil industry are the kind of people that, as the saying goes around here, wouldn't take a job in a pie factory.
No, they wouldn't. What I want to point out by this whole thing is, you know, is the deceptions that these people use. You know, and they have all the, you know, well, you know, the Chris Matthews and, you know, all these people, you know, I mean, everybody's yelling, you know, oh, Anwar, Anwar. It's just a little bitty piece. You know, if you take the whole thing, it's the size of a football field. Blah, 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 blah. You know, and they already have the leases. They already have the land available that they could, according to this thing, development of and production from the 68 million acres currently under lease but not in production could cut U.S. imports of oil by one third. That's a pretty big number.
Yeah, it is.
Right. But they refuse to do it. And why do they not do it? They don't want that oil in production.
You don't want to kill the
you know,
the goose is laying golden eggs like a machine gun right now.
Right. This is, you know, so they always argue supply and demand. They have artificially made the supply low so that the demand remains high and that they could charge 130 barrels, you know, dollars a barrel. I commend Ray Hall for putting this out, and I think it's good. If we could only straighten him out on a few other issues, you know, I might be able to vote for him.
Yeah, the only thing that disturbs me is whether any of those public lands have coal leases under them and you know, want to mountaintop remove them. And now, to be fair, Wayne, there is also another underlying issue here, and that is looking for more oil is not the solution to our problem.
No, it is not.
Because that's a junkie looking for another fix,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to getting clean. And so, you know, you do have to take that into consideration. I personally would like to see us just revoke the damn leases.
Well, that's what the article was in the paper. I mean, that's what he's saying. Either, you know, use it or lose it. You know, either start drilling or lose your lease. And, well, I think they should really move in that effort.
It's amazing. I saw
8 million acres. I wonder how many of them could produce wind power or solar power.
Probably a lot.
Yes.
Considering where the oil is.
Right.
Probably got wind there, too.
Yep. And, you know, solar power, you don't need to be high. The sun shines in a lot of places that aren't, you know.
I've gotten some of the nastiest sunburns of my life. And I sunburn easily on cloudy days.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But I saw this other story that was just mind-boggling, and I'm trying to find it now. Apparently, a technology company out there has developed a little genetically modified critter, or I don't even know if it's genetically modified, but it is a critter of some sort. You know,
that eats waste and poops oil.
Yes.
That guy.
Yeah, that's almost as good as beer and yeast.
Yeah, it is.
This little biological thing eats wheat straw that would otherwise be burned or turned into compost or thrown away.
Wood waste.
Wood chip waste, sawdust, and turns it into petroleum.
Yeah. And you don't even have to drill for it.
No.
No.
And, I mean, you put it in, you put it, really, I mean, I made the beer analogy, but I guess I would imagine that the process is somewhat similar. You put all the stuff in a big tank, you pour in the creatures, just like you do yeast into beer wort, and you walk away for a while, and you come back, and you got 10W40.
Yeah. And you don't even have to wipe their little butts or anything.
No.
No, you just got it.
You know, better living through molecular biology. Ain't evolution grand?
Yes, it is. And, well, you know, here's something even simpler is algae.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing. I forget the numbers are astronomical compared to corn-based ethanol. And, you know,
Guess who's out there? Guess who's out there hollering about the big bad genetically modified bugs, though? This is the fun part.
The oil companies?
You would be right.
Yeah. You know, who's, you know, I mean, you know the fight we're having with windmills down in Greenbrier County.
Sure.
And the people from Coal River came, I was at the commission, came with a proposal of windmills down in their area. That, you know, the owner of the land has to decide whether he's going to lease it to coal companies to, you know, for some reason or another, they're calling it strip mining, but what they're going to do is mountaintop removal on 30 or 6,000 acres. And, you know, if you do that, then the area becomes too low and the wind currents drop to where, you know, it's not viable to do the windmills. And, you know, they estimate that there are many deep mines in the same area. The deep mining could continue. The coal companies could still recover 67% of the coal that's there, and you could have the windmills. Sounds like a win-win situation to me.
It sounds like, you know, the end of the presentation. Give me where do I sign?
Right, exactly. You know, but, you know. Who do you think's going to fight that?
Well, I'm sure that Don Blankenship has suddenly found himself to be a friend of bats and birds.
Yeah, oh, exactly. You know, we got to worry about them little bats.
Never mind the fact that the bats couldn't live on a mountaintop removal site. But, you know, that's me.
But anyway, if anybody's interested in reading this, it's the Committee of on Natural Resources, and our Congressman, Nick J. Rahal, is chairman. And, just Google the truth about America's energy, and boom, it pops right up.
Yeah, and
very,
you know,
interesting.
Good on him. Done it right.
You know, and if you want the graph, switch over to black only.
Yeah, do not print in color.
Exactly.
It'll be a $35 report.
So, anyway, pal.
All right.
I didn't, like I say, I didn't know if you had talked.
I'm
about
glad
that
you brought it up because I'd seen it and I had it in mind, but you know how the show goes.
I do know how it goes.
Just a little rabbit wandering off down the path. That's what I am.
Exactly.
We'll talk to you later, Wayne.
Driven, you know.
Yeah. Well, driven sometimes. That's true.
I wanted to add one thing to Cassandra's call or Sandra's call.
Yeah.
How come it takes so long to bury these people?
You know, you'd think there'd get to be a smell after a while.
I mean, my gosh. You know, it goes on forever. I mean, you know. And, you know, listen, I feel sorry for the guy's family. I know his family loved him and all that stuff. But, you know.
I'll tell you what.
How many other people died that day?
Right. But there's one thing, Al. You talk about how long it takes to bury him. I guess we don't have to worry about the power elite in America ever converting to Islam or anything, because you got to dirt nap somebody within 24 hours in that religion.
I think that's a great rule. I really like that, you know. I mean, you remember my genius thing, and I, you know, there were specific instructions from her, pal. And, you know, one of them is, you think you're going to, if you stick me in a box and let people come and look at me for 3 days and tell everybody how good I look, I'll come back and haunt you forever.
Which, on the one hand, would have been kind of nice, but having her pissed at you is no fun.
No, that's not. I experienced that once or twice. Right that wasn't fun at all.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So, anyway, buddy.
All right.
You know, you have a good evening, and hello to all the listeners, and send money.
Yeah, send money.
You know, that's all I can tell you. Send money.
Yeah, exactly.
We managed to pay the phone bill again, but, you know.
We dodged the June bullet.
Exactly, but there's one coming up in July, so.
Yeah, exactly. And we were late on June, but, you know, these things
happen.
Yeah,
we're always late on. Well, you know,
they bill a month in advance, so we live behind the eight ball.
Well, and we never get it paid till we get that 10-day notice that they're going to shut us off, which would put us off the air.
It kind of would, yes.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, brother, I hope you get to feeling better.
I thought, you know, I'm going to be all right, man.
Yeah.
So.
Nasty sounding
anyway,
cough, though.
Peace and love and all that hippie shit, man. And, you know, we'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care, Wayne.
All right, brother. Bye.
Bye now. Well, we sort of blew right past the top of the second hour, and we've blown past the top of the third hour. No bumper music, no intros, no nothing. I tell you what, this is conversation radio at its very finest, where conversation comes first and formatics come second, or last, or 533rd. Hi, who have I got?
You got me.
Hey, David, what's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to say a few things. Also, I was waiting for the gold commercial, but I didn't hear it.
Buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your best.
Isn't that sad that Malloy has to do that now?
Oh, golly.
Doesn't that just break your heart?
I can't think he's real thrilled about it.
I would get away with saying the most sarcastic gold commercial. They wouldn't even know. They'd be like, that's awesome! Dude, that's what he should do. That's what I'd do.
Well, bless his heart. You know, I did pay attention to the wording of the commercial and,
yeah,
I kind of came away with something out of that.
Yeah. I guess what I wanted to say was I got in a conversation with my conservative friend who I'm still going to try to get to call in because he really does have an interesting point of view. And, yeah, he has a quote that I was going to share with you on the air.
Okay.
I had to shorten but he really does have a point when I thought about it. Especially where I live. Maybe not where you live, Bob, but what he said was, we have the stupidest middle class in the world, spending extravagantly way beyond their means. And I said to him, I said, yeah, but, I mean, there are some people here who are honestly just doing enough to get by. And he would just point to me car after car, person after shopping bag on the street because I live downtown. And, Bob, I couldn't argue with him. I really couldn't. Because after a while, it's like, I see the cars out there every day, man. I see the shopping bags out there every day. I see what people are buying, and I see that it's not the necessities. And I don't know what to tell you. I mean, from my vantage point, from my bird's eye view, eventually we need to face these inner demons. Serious. I mean, I can talk about the Republicans till the cows come home, but really, when I start looking at everybody around me,
everybody's buying crap.
Yeah.
And they're doing it on plastic.
Yeah.
And hence we go back to Albert's comment about debt and what happens when the chickens come home to roost.
But you know, I have a theory. I think I know what's happening. People are croaking before they pay the debt. And they have all this nice stuff, and they're just passing it on to the next one. Because I can't explain it. Well, I see BMWs on my street. I'm like, how the hell can someone afford a BMW here? And I was thinking, what job do they have? Because they don't have any jobs around here. It's, you know, it's like the Twilight Zone. I see shiny car after shiny car after shiny car. And I'm thinking, no credit card's going to take that. And eventually I can only come down to one thing. These people, they live so fast and northeastern glamorous or whatever, and the way that Pine Tree Elite, I don't know, lobster bisque styling.
Oh, that's cruel. what I wouldn't give for a lobster or some lobster bisque right now.
Yeah, but I
just try to avoid the food porn, okay?
Okay, all right. I didn't mean to do that. I started thinking about it, and I was like, you know what? I can't really lecture to you. You're right. You're right. All around me, I see it. I can't tell you what's best for this
country. That's because of the psychological manipulation that the American people have been subjected to since the end of World War II. There was a very conscious decision made to turn us from being citizens into being consumers.
My cynical nature wants to say that we will always be inherently corrupted. I really tend to believe that. I mean, no matter what political affiliation or ideology you have, just because of everything I see around me, Bob, I mean, it's constant. I mean, there's only so much I can say before I look around. Because I know, here's the funny thing. Me and him, we're like islands from the same type of ideologies. He doesn't follow everything that someone tells him on the radio or news, but he takes what they take and he absorbs it in the same way, from the left vantage. So, I mean, There's a point, Bob, where I have to say, you know, nothing will change until we face our inner demons. And I can't lecture someone or get on that soapbox and tell someone about that. I just can't.
Well, I understand what you're saying. But
yeah.
it occurs to me, David, that when you talk about this stuff, and I don't mean you, we, when we talk about this stuff,
yeah.
What we're talking about is a very thin veneer that is actually over what is already something approaching the American Great Depression.
Yeah.
Because if, okay, story time. My parents were children during the Great Depression and teenagers during the Great Depression, and they had very vivid memories of it because, you know, what happens to you when you're a kid, as you get older, you find is easier to access in your memory than what happened, you know, day before yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me about people getting by on, you know, a pair of shoes a year. And they told me about, you know, wartime rationing in the Second World War when you couldn't get a tire or a car or gasoline. And that was that is a dying off generation that was a generation that learned to get by on what it could. And what we have now is a situation where if Americans were forced
mm-hmm.
to get by on only what America is able to produce, it would be the same situation. You wouldn't be able to get a tire. You would not be able to get a pair of shoes. You wouldn't be able to get a television, a refrigerator, a sewing machine, because it's all offshore now.
Yeah.
So encouraging this orgy of spending is a way to encourage, is a way to keep the American people from actually seeing the rather desperate straits that we're in. I mean, my God, George Will showed up on one of the Sunday Babble shows.
Oh, I heard about this.
And said that Americans are better off now than they were in 2000.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I don't know what the next revelation, you know, he's a big baseball nut, George Will is. You know, I expected the next thing out of his mouth to be that the Brooklyn Dodgers were going to take the pennant this year.
I got a Twilight Zone moment to share that adds on to that. My friend was telling me, I told him, he said, you know, on Bill Moyers, I shouldn't have mentioned that name, because that was obviously going to color me in as a liberal dissident or whatever. But I said, you know, I said in 1948, we're right where they said it was like similar. We're making less than they were in 1948. You know what his answer was?
What's that?
He said, that's because women are working now. Like,
oh God.
God. But that's.
Yeah, that's where you put the fork. That's where you put the fork in your eyeball, David. It's just over there.
I know. And I was like, yeah, but what does that really have to do with anything? He's like, well, and then he started going to numbers and figures and.
Well, Rush Limbaugh said 2 weeks ago that America became more liberal because women got the vote. Holy smoke! And you know, you think about it, somebody like Limbaugh's stupid little audience of 5 million people a day. And you know that of that 5 million, about 4 million agree with him. And so you know that when Rush Limbaugh says that the country became more liberal because women got the vote, there are 4 million people, many of whom are women, going, yep, that's a ditto, Rush. Oh, God, you're doing it with one hand tied behind your brain or something again, aren't you? Talent on loan from God. Oh, my goodness. How true?
Every time I tell him, I say, you know, but this is the possibility that this is what's coming down the road. And he'll always say, possibly. And then he'll say, theoretically. And these are these ways out. These are the ways out. They reason with it. Possibly it could happen. Possibly.
Sort of like a reverse of Wallace Shawn in The Princess Bride. Conceivably.
Yeah, conceivably. Yeah, before I go, I just wanted to quote something from, I guess, David Iglesias said something on The Daily Show last night. It's a really beautiful quote. Stewart asked him, he says, Is the greatest disappointment for you that you were a guy who believed in what they were doing? Do you feel betrayed in that sense? And Iglesias answered with this humdinger. I thought I was working with the Jedi Knights, and I was working for the Sith Lords.
Well, but see, I would have modified that. I thought I was working for the Jedi Knights, and it turns out I was working for the Sand People.
The Sand People, that's true.
It turns out I was working for the Ewoks.
Well, Bob, I'm going to let you get to your stacks of stories.
All right, David, take care, brother.
Later.
Talk to you later. Bye. Our pal David in Maine, our pop culture correspondent, now out there reaching out to the right wing. God help him. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hey, Juanita. Sorry you had to wait so long.
I didn't know you were talking to me.
I am now.
Oh, how are you doing?
I'm okay. Getting along, I guess.
I want to talk about, I was calling about the bills and the doctors and all, but
sure.
I wanted to, I heard him talking about the funeral thing.
Yes.
Are they going to have that on all the TV stations, his funeral?
Oh, Lord, I hope not. But I'm sure there will be, you know, a story about it on the evening news. If they actually break programming to run that, I will know that the TV network news organizations have jumped the shark. Now, I wouldn't be surprised to see it on CNN or Headline News or MSNBC or, well, God knows, MSNBC and CNBC and maybe even Fox. But
I don't know. I didn't watch any of the glorification. I saw enough on the Internet and,
very few people know that Tim Russert invented peanut butter. Where does it end?
Well, he loved children too. I heard that today.
Yeah, roasted on a spit, done to a tender turn where the skin's kind of crackly and mm-hmm. yet the meat's all tender on the inside.
A lot of time with children.
Yeah. Okay. And how was he with puppies and kittens?
How was he with what?
Puppies and kittens. Oh, I love the puppies and the kittens. Well, he was a I mean, yeah, can it be, you know, everybody's told us now also that he was a devout Roman Catholic. How far can his elevation to sainthood be?
But he just talked a while ago about funerals.
Yes.
About not wanting to be in the box, people looking at you. Oh, I know our family's all changed the way, you know, it used to be like you had. After the third day, you would have a burial.
Right.
You'd have all that viewing in between. And you'd have the service at the church or the funeral home. Then they'd all follow and go to the graveyard, and you have another thing there. So I noticed I lost a 98-year-old aunt about a month ago. And she had, they just had a simple graveside ceremony, and she was already buried. I kept waiting for the funeral to come. But, you know, that cost them $4,000.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And it wasn't, and they didn't have anything extra. The newspapers, they wanted $100-something to spell her name right. And so, anyway... But I thought that's getting better. But I'll tell you the best one I've heard of is the Zoroastrians.
Yeah.
You ever heard about their burial?
No, I know about Zoroastrianism, but I don't know how they buried their dead.
Well, at one time I was wanting a Tibetan funeral because they let the buzzards eat you and then they do what they will with the bones. But I found out that they have to chop you up and put oil, you know, to attract the birds because, you know, so I said, I don't know about that, because I don't want to be cremated, because too many bodies have ended up at the dumps, you know.
Well, that and the fact...
Completely...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I was going to say, it's like the story, what was it, the crematory in Maryland, it was a pet crematory, and they used it to cremate soldiers?
Oh, yeah. Lord. Oh, yeah. But anyway, the Zoroastrians, what they do, if they have... I don't know if they call it a church or temple or what, but if they have that available, they take you up to the top, which is open. They put you up there, and they leave you till the birds come down and eat your flesh. And if they don't have the building, then they take you up to a mountaintop and let the birds. But there is very, it's very ceremonial. It's,
Well, you know, I liked what the Plains Indians did, you know, going off. I liked what the Plains Indians did, going off to a far place and building a beer. And,
I mean, the Jews that bury you the day after, you have to be buried.
Well, the Muslims, and the Muslims too. You got to be in the dirt, 24 hours and in the dirt, and that's it.
Yeah. But it's ridiculous, and it's just the charge that they're making for everything. But I know that's kind of far out, but I said that would be ideal for that Zoroastrian.
Well, and again, it's a matter of social and cultural tradition coupled with the need to make money.
Yeah.
You know, every little town in 19th century America had an undertaker. And you got to do, you know, once we got past pure tribalism, somebody's got to deal with the corpses, or else they'll just stack up like cordwood. So, you know, that's how we evolved it.
It's getting ridiculous. You know, it's kind of like weddings. You know, getting so ridiculous.
Oh gosh, yes. I've got
on that order. But every little thing they charge for, you know, the papers that you have printed up, and so they didn't do that. She had only had like what they call a street policy, and I thought it was great. She said some of the family probably be criticizing it, but I said, who cares, you know?
Well, I remember, I'm not complaining,
okay.
But it cost us about it, and you know, my dad had a prepaid plan, and it cost us, he wasn't quite done paying on it. And the grand total on my dad's burial was something on the order of $6,000.
Was what?
$6,000. So
after him doing all that, huh?
Yeah, he'd only paid about I think $3,000, and so there was another $3,000 to be paid.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. But anyway,
you know, I used to say I wanted him to chop me up into chum and just take me out and feed the sharks. That's as good as anything.
I didn't get that, Bob. I think you're fading away from me.
Oh, I'm gonna have to buy you a new phone. no, I said I just wanted to chop me up and feed me to the sharks. That works as well for me as anything else.
Feed you to who?
The sharks. Sharks.
Oh yeah.
Dun 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 dun. Yeah, sharks. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's
either that or I want to be an Egyptian mummy. I mean, I want the pyramid. I want the obelisk. I want it all. No half measures. I want the gold mask, the works. You know, I like the Romans had a great tradition. How did we get off on this one?
They do?
You and me. Well, they cremated their dead. But before they did that, they made these elaborate lifelike wax masks.
I saw that one time on TV.
But the thing is, they kept the masks in the home, and they were added to with each dying member of the family. And they had a room where the family gods were had a little altar, and there were these wax death masks that had a candle behind them, kind of illuminate them, but not enough to melt the wax. Yeah, that's kind of neat.
Yes, it is.
It's sort of, you know, it's a 2,000-year-old form of having having photographs around. Only in three dimensions.
You were talking about the Indians. There's some place that one of the Indian tribes, they build like stilts and wrap them in animal skins, and they're way up high.
Yeah.
I saw that a long time ago, and I thought that would be neat.
But unfortunately, we'll all of us probably get the usual treatment of either being burnt boxed.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm gonna let you go, and you have a good evening.
Well, you too, Juanita.
And I'll talk about some other time. I think I need to write about it because it's kind of complicated. My years of filing for insurance,
mm-hmm.
especially the ones for the doctor, that was really you'd have to call the insurance companies, and they all had different ways that they handled his thing.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And I was supposed to be filing his insurance, and also I had to schedule his surgeries. And anyway, you have to learn all these codes.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. It is a separate vocation unto itself. Coding medical bills.
You have to know how to play the game. It's all playing a game, is what it is.
Yeah.
And if you don't play it, and I didn't know when I first started. I've done it in hospitals, but it's different with the doctor's office. And he was just not making any money, and he had people stealing from him and everything, and it was just a big mess that I walked into. But I got a handle on a lot of it. But anyway, I remember one time he had either a 4-hour or a 5-hour operation. He was a really good guy, you know, he was a really nice man. And they paid him, Medicare paid him $400 for that.
Goodness me.
And because I didn't know how to manipulate all those codes and all.
Right.
I was learning. But it's something else. But I think I'll write about it. It's because it's so much to it. But when everything changed with Medicare was back in 1980, and we got all those people, that's where everything got screwed up. But it's still better than anything else.
Exactly. But even under the circumstances,
right.
This new study proves that they are worlds ahead of the for-profit illness industry in dealing with the payment of claims.
Yeah. It's something else. It really is.
Yeah, I would think that the American Medical Association, armed with this data, would absolutely be at pitchforks and torches and up in arms demanding universal single-payer health care, because then they wouldn't have their membership out there spending 14% of their income trying to collect their what they're due.
Yeah.
Well, Juanita, the other thing, I doubt that I'll be on the air tomorrow night, maybe Thursday, but one way or another, mm-hmm. we will be expecting the Michelle Obama View report as soon as I get back, okay?
Okay.
All right.
All right, I'm going to try to write everything down.
Okay, well, you take care, Juanita.
Okay, you too.
All right, bye now.
Night-night.
Bye. View correspondent Juanita calling from Florida. Tell you what, a little break is in order. I've been at this for 2.5 hours, and, you know, there are reasons for breaks, you know, when you get right down to it. So we'll be back after a couple of minutes, a little musical interlude for you. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn.
Shadow of the man that I once knew. Are you
One of my favorite Steely Dan tracks from Katie Ludd. That's Dr. Wu. And, yeah, just love it. Just love it. Are you really just a shadow of the man I once knew? You know, how Juanita and I got off on what we, not got off on, but wandered over to or took up the topic of how people, well, okay, it trails back to the Russert thing. And I sure would, you know, I got this private message from News Ninja Gene who said he's really looking forward to being somebody's little Soylent snack, especially if it's a cutie. You guys, what am I going to do with you people? But no, I, you know, being an Egyptian mummy would be kind of cool because, you know, here in the hills and everything, have somebody dig me up 2,000 years from now and go, wow, this guy must have been somebody. And then there's the other favorite thing. This was a I can't remember his name, but he was a lawyer in my hometown. And he set aside money outside the estate so that when he went on to his reward, that there could be the funding for a huge party. Huge. Open bar, everything. Band, yeah. And his request was that everyone who attended was to, even the teetotalers, he wanted them all to get really, really liquored up so that they would have terrible, terrible hangovers, and henceforward, whenever they felt bad, they'd say, gee, I haven't felt this bad since so-and-so died, which I find nice, too. But I feel a little dodgy talking about all this, having been sick and not being completely recovered yet, you know, time out. Knocking wood. Oh, such a creature superstition. Okay, other stuff. Stuff that I've been meaning to get to and didn't. From the WTF department. What the? Freedom's on the march in Afghanistan, isn't it? You caught that, right? The business about the big jailbreak there in Kandahar. Or, no, it wasn't in Kandahar. No, Kandahar is where the Taliban has taken over all the outlying communities and cut off all the roads. Oh, we're just... And Hamid Karzai is saying he'll cross the border into Pakistan to chase down the Taliban, to which the government of Pervez Musharraf said, like hell you will. This is just going to work out so nice. You know, I'd say it's about time for us to get the hell out of there, too. And let them sort it out for themselves. I mean, the nerve of us, the hubris, the gall of us thinking that we can do something Alexander couldn't do, that we could do something the Romans couldn't do, that we could do something to a large extent even the armies of the caliphs couldn't do, that we could do something the Russians couldn't do, or the British, or the Russians again. No, but we're going to get it. No, it doesn't work like that. There's a line in Frank Herbert's Dune where he says, God made Dune to train the faithful. I think you could probably say the same thing about Afghanistan. There are some places on this planet that you just don't go unless you want to be sorely tested and come home limping bad. It's time to get out of Iraq. It's time to get out of Afghanistan. It's time to come home. It's time to mind our own problems. But there I go, you know, all being all optimistic and peace-loving and everything. So, no, the prison break, the American estimate, well, yeah, 400 people got away. No, it was more, it was closer to over 1,000. Lots of them, Taliban. So, you know, I'm thinking this is not going to end well. But God knows our betters probably haven't figured that, can't figure that out yet. Moving through stuff. I got an email. You remember when Congressman Bob Filner was on the show a few weeks back? He's the chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. He issued a statement today demanding that the Veterans Administration immediately suspend a drug study of a drug that has proven to have violent side effects on veterans. These experimental drug tests are being performed on veterans of a drug called Chantix. Now, unless I'm mistaken, that's the stop smoking drug. But the FDA has already issued warnings that link Chantix to suicidal ideations, aggressive behavior, erratic behavior. And the VA just kept on with its study, kept on giving the veterans this stuff. Got to test it on somebody. Congressman Filner noted that after the VA issued its, FDA issued its warning, the VA took more than 3 months to notify patients. And they did so in a form of bureaucrat ease that didn't even tell the patients what the side effects of the drug were. There were 940 veterans in the study, Congressman Filner says. Why didn't the VA just call them and bring them in immediately? He also notes that the warning came too late for James Elliott, a decorated Army veteran who came close to ending his own life in suicide by cop. James Elliott says the VA used him like a lab rat and treated him like a disposable hero. There have been more than 400 incidents of suicidal behavior and 40 actual suicides linked to Chantix. And yet the VA still continues. Okay, maybe that's not the non-smoking drug, but the VA continues to administer Chantix to veterans who already have PTSD. Smart guys we got running this government. Smart guys. Let's see, it causes suicidal ideation, violent, aggressive, and erratic behavior. So let's give this drug that does all that to some people with some suicidal ideations already and violent, and aggressive, and erratic behavior. See how smart we are? Oh, look, we didn't make them all better. We better study this some more. Okay, onward. Other things. Let's see. I've gotten several emails recommending this video to me. The audio is plenty good, standing on its own. Worth sharing with you. It's a video called "I'm Voting Republican." And it just, it says everything you could possibly, this is it. This is perfect. You remember when whoever it was did the video slideshow of George Bush to the song, "I'm an Asshole"? Well, this is the 2008. This is every bit as good as that in terms of its just stark truthfulness. I'm voting Republican.
We're voting Republican because we don't like shopping at small neighborhood stores.
We don't want the problem of choosing where to shop.
And we just love cheap plastic crap from China.
I'm voting Republican because I don't really want a cure for AIDS or breast cancer. They're just gazing women.
I'm voting Republican because I think new drugs should be made available immediately, whether they've been tested properly or not. If the major pharmaceutical companies' bottom lines are healthy, then I feel healthy too.
Bye-bye, baby. Have a good day. Here. I'm voting Republican so that my little Caitlin can be in the classroom with at least 30 other children. That way, she can be challenged by fighting for attention.
I'm voting Republican because women just can't be trusted to make decisions about their own bodies. Never, ever, ever.
I'm voting Republican because I've already seen a great outdoors. Continuing our use of fossil fuels freely is far more important than preserving our natural wildlands.
We're voting Republican because we like a conservative majority on the Supreme Court.
We really like knowing that even if we're separate, we'll still be called equal.
I'm voting Republican because I need to be told who I can love.
I told you.
Honey, I need the government to tell me.
I just need them to tell me how I can best show a lifetime commitment.
And Republicans are just the folks to do that, sweetheart.
I'm voting Republican because corporations should not have to pay to clean up environmental damage. The EPA is an outmoded idea. If people want clean water, buy it in a bottle.
I'm voting Republican because I don't want to know if the food I'm eating has been genetically modified or exposed to radiation. I don't want to have to live with that fear, you know? So, if the label says it's food, that's good enough for me.
I'm voting Republican because
I really enjoy being screwed by the utility companies.
We need more minorities in prison.
Because hybrid cars really suck.
I just don't feel I deserve health insurance.
Because Texas needs more billionaires.
I'm voting Republican because sometimes the Constitution is just one big inconvenient headache.
I think the whole world should be run by one big corporation. I think it would be so much cozier.
Because all other countries are inferior to us.
We should start as many wars as we need to keep it that way.
So I can stay in Iraq.
So I can go to Iran.
So if you were thinking about voting something besides Republican, don't bother. Stay home. We've got it all taken care of. You'll get exactly what you deserve.
November 2008. Register to vote. Do it today. Do it now. You can see the video at I'mVotingRepublican.com. And I suppose that is supposed to be satire. But it isn't, is it? It's all straight up, unmitigated, unflyblown, unvarnished truth. I'm not sure what my favorite line is in there. It's a dagger in the heart of Republican policy. This is Well, please, if you've seen the same numbers that I saw that show this humongous lead that Barack Obama has over John McCain, don't take it too much to heart. It's part of the horse race mentality. It's part of the inherent design to make John McCain a comeback kid, because then they can call him a kid, because that's what they call Bill Clinton. John McCain. Oh, by the way, from the hypocrisy department, the governor of Florida is Charlie Crist. And he endorsed yesterday McCain's plan to lift the ban on offshore drilling in Florida. You listening, Floridians? I know, you're probably pissed off about the Democratic primary. Get over it, all right? You want to, you know, you've got beautiful beaches, truly beautiful beaches. Do you want to go to the beach and look out there and see in the distance an oil derrick? Oh, but Bob, it'll bring the cost of gas down. Bug spray. The Saudi Arabians have already announced that they're going to start pumping more than they have ever pumped in their entire history in July. Even with that knowledge in hand, the price of a barrel of oil continues to rise. Now, you tell me who's responsible for high gas prices. So, Charlie Crist, last week he said he opposed lifting the ban on offshore drilling off the Florida coast. But apparently he's got a real itch to be vice president. So, he flip-flopped. Question. Last week, Governor, are you dropping your opposition to drilling for oil off Florida's coast? Crist, I am not. No, I don't like it. But then John McCain came out and babbled something into a microphone yesterday. So today, Charlie Crist says, I think that not having that blanket moratorium and letting states' rights be recognized, if you will, is certainly appropriate. Oh, dear. Offshore drilling and the potential ruination of the entire Florida coastline, east and west alike, is now a states' rights issue. The poor little oil derricks can't use the same water fountains as the rest of us do. They can't sit at a lunch counter. Got to have states' rights. Oh, jeez. Isn't it fun to just watch naked political ambition in action? There's nothing quite like it. There's nothing quite so sleazy, is there? Well, yes, there is something quite so sleazy. There's Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh never misses a minute to be a good racist. Why should any given day be any different? You know, there's a lot of people in misery in the upper Midwest, in the river valleys, from the flooding that went on. But they're not miserable enough that Rush Limbaugh won't use them to make yet another racist point.
I want to know. I look at Iowa. I look at Illinois. I want to see the murders. I want to see the looting. I want to see all the stuff that happened in New Orleans. I see devastation in Iowa and Illinois that dwarfs what happened in New Orleans. I see people working together. I see people trying to save their property and save their reputation. I don't see a bunch of people running around waving guns and helicopters. I don't see a bunch of people shooting cops. I don't see a bunch of people raping people on the street. I don't see a bunch of people doing everything they can and whining and moaning, where's FEMA, where's Bush? I see the heartland of America. When I look at Iowa and when I look at Illinois, I see the backbone of America, and I see people who are doing with the best, what they have, the best they have and the best they can to straighten the situation out. I don't see, and I don't hear a bunch of caterwauling about where's FEMA and where's Bush, and I don't hear a bunch of people whining and moaning about how lackluster and poor the response has been. I see people not waiting around. I see people who are trying to handle a situation on their own. And I know there are a lot of Democrats up there. Don't misunderstand here.
What?
This continual reference to Hurricane Katrina by Democrats like Al Gore, elections matter. Like the aftermath of New Orleans wouldn't have happened if Bush had not been president? You mean if Al Gore had been president?
Well, maybe if Bush hadn't been cutting birthday cake on the tarmac next to this, Air Force One with John McCain, who said he would have turned Air Force One right around. Never mind.
And Katrina had still happened. That somehow all of the rot that happened in New Orleans afterward would not have happened. Simply because Al Gore was in the White House, they wouldn't have been waving guns at the helicopters. Congressman William Jefferson, Democrat Louisiana, wouldn't have confiscated a couple of rescue vehicles to go to his house and rescue him.
And some right-wing Some right-wing couple wouldn't have confiscated a couple of Illinois Department of Natural Resources John boats to go and rescue little frozen embryos. Rush, did you forget that one, you big old gas bag? Guess so.
$80,000 in cold cash that he had in the freezer? Are you saying there wouldn't have been the rapes and what all of else we heard that went on in New Orleans if Al Gore or a Democrat had been in the White House? It would have been worse. With a Democrat in the White House, the people in New Orleans would have sat around and done even less to help themselves.
Why is he gasping for breath? Did you hear that? Why is Flush Flimball gasping for breath? Is it all finally catching up with him? One wonders. But there you have it. Nice, lily-white Midwesterners pulling themselves up by their own bootstraps because they're more patriotic than the shiftless people in New Orleans. Never mind that New Orleans is below sea level. Never mind that you had a complete breakdown of all services. Never mind that elderly people either drowned or roasted in their attics in 100-degree-plus temperatures. Never mind all that. If the people in New Orleans just would have been a little bit more patriotic and a whole lot more white, everything would have been okay. And you know what? He may be a little bit correct. If New Orleans had been a whole lot more white, George Bush might have given a whole lot more of a damn. And there ain't no getting around that. So that's the program. And I don't think I'll be with you tomorrow night, but I'm going to take the rig with me just in case there's some wireless intertubes, and we'll see if I can get on the air at 6 p.m. If I can, I will. Hope to be on the air Thursday night and Friday. Thanks, everyone, for your conversations, for your emails, for your thoughts, for your time. Everything else is a rerun because from here on out, Peter Godbold has been in server hell for a couple of days. And John Fox has been in his own form of server hell for more than a couple of days, but he is oh so close to getting the website back up. And you know what? I think in the grand scheme of things, well, John just told me that that's priority. That's job one, is getting the website back up. So, you know, thanks for the yeoman efforts, John. It's appreciated. Thanks to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, who makes all the streams do what the streams do, as well as handling the archives and the podcasts for the Horn. You value the Horn. You value Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to everyone who contributes to keep us on the air. We have been, because of the website problems, unable to receive your contributions for the last few days. So when the website goes back up, just check, and we can use all the help that you can share. And we do appreciate it to degrees more than can be expressed. And more than even perhaps you know. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. You can go there for very little. You can become a member of Coal River Mountain Watch, and you can become a part of the solution that will save us all from mountaintop removal. Because after all, we're all downstream. And always, 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 RMR, Gina. It's all for you.